Hi, good morning. Good morning. We lost track of time taking care of some administrative items this morning. And so if we if everyone can grab their seat, we'll get this meeting started. So good morning. It's 9:01 and I'll call this meeting to order. Carrie, will you please take roll?
Chair Brooks.
Here.
Vice Chair Ariscotta.
There.
Regent Boylan.
Aye.
Regent Brager.
Here.
Regent Brown.
Here.
Regent Carvalho.
Here.
Regent Cruz Crawford.
Here.
Regent Del Carlo.
Here.
Regent Downs.
Here.
Regent Goodman.
Here.
Regent McMichael. Regent Perkins.
Here.
Regent Tarkanian.
Here.
You have a quorum present.
Great. Thank you. Regent Brager, would you mind leading us in the pledge? Thank you. Thank you very much. I want to recognize and acknowledge Deputy Attorney General Sophia Long, who will be with us for this meeting today to ensure that we stay within the confines of open meeting law. Thank you very much for being here. We appreciate it. I also wanted to let everybody know that we're pulling agenda item number 3 from today's meeting, and we will hear that item at another time. I'll now move to agenda item number 1, which is public comment. Is there any public comment in Elko?
There is no public comment in Elko.
Thank you.
Chair, I apologize. Yeah. For the record, could you also let the participants know who are on the video hookup how to make public comment if they wish? So the call-in, so if you can just read into the record the call-in number and then the Zoom information.
Sure.
It's new to open meeting.
Yeah, that's okay. I don't have that with me right now. If you want to give me a second, then I'll get that. Thank you. And I was wondering why we had never done that before, Deputy Attorney General. It's because that we don't allow call-in public comment in that manner. There is a line that folks... Is that what you're speaking of very specifically?
Yes. Please.
So the line then that would typically be used for public comment. Give us 1 second. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, we allow pre-recorded public comment and written submissions. We don't have a line for live public comment. Live public comment is in at the 3 sites only.
Is that okay with how we've got this set up?
And I apologize. Could you also let the folks know how to, log in either, because I believe there's people connected on Zoom. Is that correct? So how they can connect with Zoom.
We share the Zoom link with regents for the purposes of a quorum and with constituent groups within NSHE. That's who's connected by Zoom.
Okay, so the entire general public is here in this room.
We have remote sites in Reno and in Elko.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
Are we okay to proceed?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
All right. Thank you very much. There was no public comment in Elko. Is there any public comment in Reno?
Yes, there is.
Thank you.
Good morning, Chair Brooks and members Kent Irvin, ERVIN, past president, Nevada Faculty Alliance. The agenda today is for appointment of our 4th chancellor in a little over 3 years. The process for appointment of an interim is less than transparent. It does not reflect the full values of shared governance. We do appreciate that Ms. Charlton is willing to take on a job that most would consider poisonous given the recent history of chancellors and personnel decisions at NSHE. NFA, the Nevada Faculty Alliance, will strive to work cooperatively with her. A full national search should be conducted for a permanent chancellor. But before the board proceeds with the search, you all need agreement among board members of what you want in a chancellor and what the qualifications are. That kind of consensus was obviously lacking in the most recent search. Regarding today's decision points, NSHE Code Title II, Chapter 1, Section 5.4E states, quote, an interim chancellor may only be appointed for a specified term of 1 to 3 years by an affirmative vote of not less than two-thirds of the board. Your bylaws thus stipulate a specified term of between 1 and 3 years, not an open-ended or indefinite term for appointment of the interim chancellor. At any time during the 1 to 3 year term, the board can decide to conduct the search for a permanent chancellor, but the initial term of appointment must be specified as 1 to 3 years. Thank you for listening.
I believe that's all the public comment that we have in Reno. Is there public comment in Las Vegas?
Bill Robinson, UNLV Faculty Senate Chair. I'm going to disagree with my colleague up in Reno to some extent. I'm going to urge you to do a regional search, just to do a search in Nevada. Don't spend $100,000 right now doing a national search, but you know, say, hey, we're looking for a chancellor. If you don't know what that means, don't bother to apply. Send your resume into the system office and let's go. And make it open, make it completely open, no anything. Just if you want to apply, you're applying. And you got to be in Nevada, part of the NSHE, and or at least some connection to the NSHE, and you understand what the job is. I think we need stability, and I think the best way to do that is to look inside and look at our own house and not spend $100,000 looking for somebody who may be out there but might not be any better than what we can find in our own house. Number two, I've known nominee Charlton since this was the UCCSN at least.
It was.
and we all... and. There's no question that she's capable of doing this job quite well, and we should all be happy about that. And I'm just going to, for the millionth time, just say you need to pay Carrie what she's worth. She and her staff do yeoman work, and there's a market for salaries for folks who do what she does, and you should pay her what she's worth. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Chantal Marshall, M-A-R-S-H-A-L-L. I'm an associate professor at Nevada State, as well as the vice president of the Nevada Faculty Alliance. I'm going to reiterate some of the points that my colleague Kent made, as well as the points made in an email that you all received from us. And that is that this process has not been transparent, and we're talking about the process and not the outcome. And there's nothing at all against the name that has been brought up. But faculty really want to be a part of this process. We are part of the processes among our campus. We do a lot of service. I just sat on the committee to choose our next provost at Nevada State. I am in the front lines interacting with students. I've seen the now university change over time. And all faculty have a very unique perspective on our campuses that can really make the process a lot better for the whole system. But importantly, faculty want to be heard. We want a seat at the table. So I just want to reiterate again that the process has not at all been transparent. And that is not just a feeling that faculty have, but Regents themselves have told us that this process has not even been transparent for your entire group. And so that's really concerning to us, that it's not even been the Board of Regents. It has been a handful of regents who have gone through this process. And so we want to reiterate that when we do a search for a chancellor, that it is transparent, it has our voices, and everyone knows exactly how the finalists were chosen. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Carolyn Collins. I'm an C-O-L-L-I-N-S. I'm an emeritus faculty from CSN, and I'm here to speak on behalf of Patty Charlton. I've known Patty Charlton for almost 50 years. From my positions over that time, as a faculty member, as a faculty senate chair, as a department chair, as a budget committee chair, as a team member on multiple committees, and as a friend. In those perches, I have watched Patty navigate numerous NG budget building processes, a dozen legislative sessions at least, several formula funding studies, which you guys are going to love, 20 public works projects, multiple accreditations, and the list goes on. And she has always been, as everyone is going to say, highly effective and very committed to outcomes. She has always represented the interest of higher ed well. That has been her paramount goal, the students, the system, and what we do to have quality. As you look for someone to keep the trains running at NG while you bring on a permanent chancellor, build a team, and launch the mandated studies about the future of higher ed, I can tell you you're lucky, very lucky, to have Patty Charlton willing, probably very reluctantly, to take on this position. First, no one, I mean no one, knows how the system works within the colleges, the system level, and the state better than Patty. That is crucial right now, I would think. Second, the term leadership is often bandied around in too much with very little true leadership going on. It's rare. I can tell you honestly, I believe Patty Charlton has the strongest leadership qualities I have seen in my career.
Excuse me, ma'am. I greatly appreciate your comments. I'm
okay.
Unfortunately, we've hit a little bit beyond
that. I am sorry. I only had 10 seconds. I will go.
Thank you. Bart Patterson, P-A-T-T-E-R-S-O-N. I'm the retired immediate past president of Nevada State College. So for the new regents, I retired just before the election. So that's why you don't know who I am. But I was president for almost 10 years and then in the system for 12 or 13 years. So I've worked with Patty and known Patty for 23, 24 years. And I think that this is an excellent choice. All the broad experience that you've heard about is true. But more than that, as a person, she's a listener. You will enjoy working with her positive mental attitude and can-do kind of attitude. I think you will enjoy seeing that in the chancellor. And I have every confidence that she'll be successful. I personally pledged anything I can do to help the system and her be successful. I also want to just thank the board for all that you do. I know it's always not a job where you get a lot of recognition, but I know it's a very hard job, and I know you're all doing well and doing your best to make the system a better place. And I would just, you know, strongly encourage the system as a whole and the board to start finding that common ground more and to start pulling together and working more for the betterment of the students, the faculty, and the staff here in the system of higher education. So thank you.
Good morning. I am Tracy Sherman. I am the past faculty senate chair at CSN and the past chair of the Council of Chairs. I want to start by clarifying that when Carolyn Collins knew Patty at the beginning, she was a student. So
I was.
Yeah. I also want to ask, in the future, when you make these big decisions, could you please not do it on the second day of class? Because I had to get somebody to cover, and I'm going to have to run out back to my students. So anyway, look, Patty is this calm wave that rolls over you and fixes all your problems before you even know you have them. She brought us through the 2008 recession when she was our CFO, smelling as close to a rose as CSN has ever smelled. No person knows the funding formula better than Patty. When she was at Henderson for, 5 years, she built two buildings there. She just does things because she is a force of nature. She is a community college person to the core, and Enchi leadership has not well represented the community colleges in the past, so we would appreciate even this little interim appointment. And she'll keep that seat nice and warm and give it up, I believe, quickly as soon as you find someone permanent. Unless you think that she is just a community college person, Patty is completely scalable. I mean, as soon as she was free, the Super Bowl called her. So, you know, we're not so bad off. I just want to ask you to please give her this chance, this little interim chance, and then she will help you find the perfect person to lead the system in the future. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Patrick Villa, and even though I happen to be dressed like my colleagues from UNLV today, I actually, from CSN, I'm the Faculty Senate Chair. I want to give a quick story for, if anybody has any doubts of Patty's ability, I just want to share my quick experience. When I first was hired at, back then, CCSN, I was a junior faculty member, and I was at a town hall. The administration's up there, Patty's up there, and like all new faculty, I knew everything. I had all the solutions. I had all the answers, and I was going to share this knowledge with my president. And I brought up some point, maybe helping enrollment or something like that. And Patty responded. She stood up and she took the mic and she said, "Patrick, that's a good idea, but unfortunately, we're not allowed to do it because of whatever reason." So my first two thoughts were, "Very cool. An administrator knows my first name, so thank you for that." You know, my second year. And second, I had some doubt, wondering, why is a finance person speaking about academics to me? What does she know? And, you know, I didn't know how the system worked. I was a little bit bothered, but after the meeting, Patty came and took me aside, and she explained more in depth why we couldn't do my plan or why it wouldn't work. And that little bit of explanation made the difference to me. You know, a lot of times we just hear no, and then people go off like big babies and they cry about it. And she gave me that little bit of explanation was just enough. So, you know, if I can go back and look at things, you know, after I've learned working with her, I see she knows a ton about higher ed. She knows a ton about Nevada. You know, we've already heard about that. And like I said, if I can go back in time to talk to myself and say, instead of the question of who is this person, it should have been, who in the heck are you, not knowing how important, how much this person knows. So I think we as a system, as a, you know, our whole entity is lucky to have her willing to do this. And I ask you to consider a yes vote for her today. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Dick McGee, M-C-G-E-E. Patrick's last name is spelled V-I-L-L-A. You forgot. I was at the College of Southern Nevada for 31 years, and I had a variety of positions there. I was, most people knew me as the band director, but I was also chair of the budget committee right after Carolyn there, and for many years. This goes back 20 years, and I was also a department chair for a long time. The reason I mention that is everybody stole my thunder. I was going to talk about how qualified Patty is and how nobody knows legislative appropriations better than her or the whole process better than her and all that, and that's been said. So I want to talk just for a moment about leadership, because she truly is the reluctant leader. My wife, Joan, who's right behind me here, and I both have been trying to talk her into retiring so we can go on cruises together. And we almost got it. I mean, we had her, you know, she was there, and now she's working again. But there's obviously still a fire in her. She's an amazing person. She's disarming. She's self-deprecating, but the more you get to know her, the more you get to know that she's totally comfortable in her own skin. She's modest, but again, she knows a tremendous amount about every facet of how this system works. Somebody earlier today was pleading to have an internal, I think it was one of you guys, an internal, if not an internal, at least just a regional search. You've got somebody like this right in front of you, and sometimes it's hard to see that maybe the best solution is just right under your nose. You know, leadership is not about org charts or coming up with a great slogan. Leadership is about moving people in a certain direction, and I can tell you that as a band director and an orchestra director. Patty can do that without trying. She has that in her personality, and she has all the business skills to go with it. I think she's a rare combination. So Thank you for listening, and I hope you give her this opportunity. I think Nevada will be well served. Thanks.
Good morning. My name is Dr. Joan McGee, M-C-G-E-E, and I have known Patty for a very long time. As everybody says already, the leadership skills are there, the budget skills are there, the people skills are there. She has worked tirelessly within Henderson and the regional Las Vegas area to be able to build buildings and collaborate with the school district or the chambers of commerce or whatever. But like Dick said, I happen to know him, she retired. She's not doing this for the fame, the fortune, and the glory, like many people might be. She's not seeking the permanent one. She was trying to retire, and you guys are the ones that brought her back. You put one name forward, and that's her name. So I don't think we need to convince you that she is the one person that you need. But to speak on her behalf, I think the system would be well served by having her as an interim chancellor. Like I said, she doesn't really want the job. She was trying to retire. You guys kept sucking her back in for interim academics and this and that and whatever. And she has a very hard time saying no to anything that will help the students, the faculty, and the employees with whom she works. I don't know that she's ever said no to anything. And so she's not craving the job. She didn't, you know, go out there and beat the drums to try and say, pick me. She was saying, where can we go on a trip? You know, we're trying to get a cruise together or something, have some fun. But you guys kept asking her to come back. So I think you should know that she's doing it because of her love for the students, the faculty, and the system. You know, and that's why she's doing it. And that's why she'd be your best pick. Thanks.
Thank you for all the public comment. Recognizing that we don't have any more public comment, we're going to move into agenda item number two, which is the interim chancellor search. And to begin this agenda item, I'm going to walk everyone through the process that the vice chair and I took to get to where we are today. And I know this is going to be a little bit unusual, but I was trying to figure out what's the best way to present to both the board and those who would be with us in the audience, and because I feel like this presentation is designed for everybody, I'm not going to do it from my seat here. I thought it would be rude if I did it from the podium, because then I have my back towards those who are part of this conversation. So I'm going to move off to the side so that we can all essentially be together as we take a look at this presentation. Can everyone hear me? Ish. There we go. Okay, it takes a second. There's a delay. So I think it's important to note how we got here and the process that we followed to get here. And so if we start at the beginning of when the consultant group came in, we can see that that was in February. Through the course of 5 months, this search took place. And by June, one name was brought forward, and the board decided to fail the search. There was another thing that the board did that day in failing the search, and that was asking the chair and vice chair to bring back the name, a nominee, someone who would be an interim chancellor. That person would then come before the board, be interviewed, and then the board would take a vote to decide whether or not that person matched with what the board would like. If we really take a look at July 1, when this process began, that the vice chair and I took on, you're going to see that there's ENCHI code that talks about the way this works. And in that ENCHI code, it says that the chair and vice chair shall recommend an interim chancellor to the board. And I want to just for a second just hone in on that shall, because that's part of the policy that we have to follow when we're getting this process done. And then obviously 7 months later, from the beginning of the search, we end up where we are today. It was extremely important to both the vice chair and I that we include as many people as we can to be part of these conversations. And the way that we did it was we asked for support from board staff to reach out to every institution. And from the presidents down, we said, please let those folks know that we'd like the opportunity to speak with them. In whatever manner that looked like, whether it was phone, Zoom, or in person. And we'll make ourselves available as best we can to have these types of conversations. And so if you take a look at this constituency base or input, you'll see that we spoke to 106 people throughout the entire state of Nevada. It required travel, not only, I would say it required travel for me as the chair to get to Reno, because we didn't want to do a geographic pull or hold. We wanted everyone to feel a part of this. And so I traveled to Reno and met up with Joe Arascata there to have additional conversations. This is a pretty good graph that breaks down exactly who were the groups that we spoke with. So what did we ask when we were in front of these folks from ENCHI? Essentially, what we were doing was specifically creating an environment for everyone who wanted to participate in these conversations of an informal setting so that we can just talk. And we can have very candid conversations about what this looks like and what maybe some expectations are of a chancellor coming in, and what are the things that we should consider not only with an interim chancellor, but with how things are moving within the system, the board, the institution. So again, the openness of conversation that we had is significant because we didn't define this conversation as to just one thing. It was several things that we spoke about with all of these folks. When we were having these conversations, we were matching up with what everyone suggested in terms of what does this person look like? In other words, what are the characteristics and traits of a leader that has to come in and essentially do some cleanup? Really, really put us on a pathway of success so that we have a way of moving forward, not only for the board and the system, but for our institutions, and then obviously for our students. And so if you take a look at this, you're going to see that the characteristics and traits that folks were honing in on, there were also some subcategories to that. And so the idea here is understand what folks are looking for, recognize some of these what we'll call subcategories that they are referencing, and start taking a look at who are we matching this up with. Is there a person that Joe and I can have access to or who has identified themselves to us where we're honing in on these traits of leadership, moral, integrity, collaboration, communication, experience, thoughtfulness in how things get done? This is essentially the way that we're approaching this in terms of what does that person look like? And again, how are we matching them up? So if we take a look at some of the characteristics and traits, we have rankings for what this looks like. And it's top down, but you'll see the bottom three are the most traits, right, including subcategories of these traits that folks throughout the system were looking for. And the number one characteristics and trait is diplomacy, communication, collaboration. Someone who really can be effective in terms of what it looks like to have a 13-member board, a significant staff in the system office, and presidents, and then other executives at these institutions, and get everybody together on the same page, so we're effectively moving forward in a manner that, again, best suits the state of Nevada regarding higher education. Again, it's a part of bridging this gap, right, between the characteristics that folks identified they believe we need in this person regarding leadership and the candidates. So essentially, we had six initial candidates that came forward after our meeting on June 30th when it was recognized that this was a failed search. As we were moving through this process, there was a candidate that stood out, and Joe Ariscotta and I felt this is potentially the person that we want to be able to bring forward. Unfortunately, as we were moving through this process, they exited themselves. They withdrew, which left Joe and I essentially at the beginning again in terms of continued conversations and what this really looked like. There were, in our conversations with others, sometimes somebody would say, hey, have you guys thought of so-and-so? I believe that they would be a great representative for this system. You should give them a call. We did that. And I can tell you that while I have on this presentation, those folks replied, thanks, but no thanks. They were a lot more generous in their conversations with me. And they said, these folks said, thank you very much. It's essentially almost like an honor, right, to be viewed in this manner as somebody who can come in and take over this system and guide us. And yet, for various reasons, they chose not to be a part of it. And what we recognized quickly was we've got some recruitment challenges. And frankly, some of those challenges have to do with where the system currently sits. Some of those challenges have to do with where the board currently sits. Some challenges have to do with salary and compensation. Because if we take a look at salary and compensation for a chancellor from a national perspective, you may find that we may not be in an area that yields the greatest salary for this position, and that other states and systems of higher education do. There was some feedback that we got regarding this position that while it was clear that this was for an interim chancellor and really the way that that Joe Ariscotta and I set this up was that we were calling this position an interim chancellor, and we know that this is a 1 to 3 year position based on contract. We were not looking for a Band-Aid. We've had a couple of Band-Aids. It hasn't served us. We're looking for the person that's coming in, demonstrates the capability, and leads the system. And so when we were having conversations, we were constantly looking for that type of individual, not, again, a 1 to 2 year, somebody who could really commit. And what we found was that there was some unclear expectations in terms of what this role calls for. And part of that were responsibilities and what are the hats that a chancellor has to wear and how many various lanes are they driving in to make sure that the entire state is moving in a manner that best suits higher education, the institutions, and our students. So now with, again, we had a individual we thought that we could bring forward, withdraw from this. Now our clock is running out. Because, again, if we take a look at policy, it says shall. We shall bring a nominee. And so we started taking a look at this, and who is it that we're looking for? And I got to tell you, as I was having conversations with folks, I would say, do I really believe that we can get a 10 out of 10 in terms of what everyone's looking for? And the answer is that we may not be able to get a 10 out of 10, but certainly we can get close. Maybe we can get a 7. Maybe we can get an 8. But we recognize who it is we're looking for based on the significance of the position with reflection of where we are right now and what we actually need to generate stability, continuity, and ensure that we have a smooth pathway moving forward. So who we're looking for is pretty substantial, and the requirements of who we're looking for are pretty high, because we're looking for a lot. Somebody who understands R1, somebody who has higher education experience, somebody who understands the legislative process, maybe has a network legislators that they know, so that they're not starting from fresh in terms of what some of these conversations may look like, and that would have to take place prior to the next legislative session. And so here we are with our ENCHI draft, and as we start losing what I call runway or time, or our clock is running out, 6 days before the deadline that I have to bring a nominee forward for posting, I start engaging in a telephone conversation with somebody who I believe could really do this job well, and has exemplified those characteristics and traits that folks are saying that they would like to have. 5 days until posting, this conversation went from a, hey, you know, thanks for calling, but I'm not so sure this is something that I want to do, to we're going to move forward. 1 day until the posting, the contract negotiations were complete. We were set. We were locked in. I thought this was going to be something fantastic. I went to sleep that night feeling really good about where we are as a board, as a system. And you have to remember that the vice chair had been doing this for 5 months and then the additional 2 months. For 7 months, the vice chair has been a part of a search for a chancellor. I was a part of this search for 2 months. And what I can tell you, in that 2 months, this thing consumed me, because I was eating, sleeping, dreaming, waking up to who was the interim chancellor and what are we going to do. 9 hours before the posting deadline, the candidate withdraws. That pretty much knocked the wind out of my sails. And I want you to consider the policy that we have: shall bring a nominee forward. There is no policy or guidance that says, hey, chair, if by chance you have a nominee that withdraws the day that we're going to have this meeting, here's the contingency plan for you. Here are the things that you can do. It will be okay for you to come back to the board on that day and say, listen, board, we did our best. We do have somebody. Unfortunately, they backed out. We feel like we fulfilled our responsibility and obligation. We cannot be held responsible for a person backing out at the very last minute. Please give us some more time so that we can reset and do this differently. Again, we don't have that luxury. We have a bring a name forward. And so Wednesday, August 23rd, I made a phone call to our officer in charge, Patty Charlton, and I explained to her the predicament that I was in. Now, I really want to be clear that at no time during any of this, the 2 months that Joe Ariscott and I were doing this, did Patty say, hey, you know what, Chair? I'm really interested in that position as interim chancellor. If there's an opportunity for me to throw my name in the hat, just consider that done. Those conversations didn't take place. In fact, I'm very confident in knowing that Patty was not looking at this position, but possibly something else. And so when we talk about continuity of the system in terms of where we are, it made sense that we would bring somebody back to the board who has already been doing the job. And that is really how we came up with Patty Charlton. And obviously, there were then conversations that I had to have with legal to see what does this look like. And then we moved into some, there were some other things that I needed to do for the presentation. And certainly there were conversations throughout that day in terms of what this looks like. Now, recognizing where we are on Wednesday and what the policy states, it's very clear to me that the policies that we have sometimes don't align with common sense and reasonableness, particularly if there's mitigating circumstances in which we're trying to get things done. And I found this to be a significant mitigating circumstance where policy wasn't allowing the vice chair and I flexibility, where we needed to do something. And so it made sense that we would bring Patty forward as a nominee because it provides us several things that we have to have. Provides us with time. We have somebody already in the role. Patty will just continue under a different title. It provides us the ability as a board to get together and talk about the policy and procedures that we have for these type of searches that have to be, revamped. We have to have conversations about the way this looks. Because while some folks may say that this process isn't transparent, what I would say is then we should take a look at the policy that we have in terms of how things get done so that we can open things up in a manner that best serves board members and at the same time protects those who would like to put their names in as a candidate for a position. And the way that Joe and I looked at this was this serves another role in terms of this time that we're gathering, coupled with the conversations that we can have regarding policy and procedure, because I think before we do any type of executive search for any position, including presidents, we've got to be able to go back through our policy and make sure that it's designed so that we can be successful and that we start understanding what are our salary caps and what are the things that we should be expecting and what we're able to do with recruitment and contract. The problem that we were having, and let me see, the problem that we were having was that we've got policies stacked up against us in a manner. I felt very boxed in on Wednesday, and I felt boxed in on the policy that we have. It felt to me like this was boxing us in. If we're looking at compensation and we're trying to figure out which way we want to move because we're trying to attract top-tier candidates because that's what we'd like to have in the state of Nevada, we can't draft a number one or a number two player if our salary ranges aren't designed to support a top 10 pick. We just can't. So part of this conversation, before we can start taking a look at what does it look like to do recruitment and search committees for a position, is what's the salary? And if the salary is going to be designed where compensation is lower, which means the expectation of now having a top-tier individual and moving down kind of like some of these picks, if we're not in that top 10, then what's the expectation of the results that we're going to get from the individual that we're bringing in? And if we're going to take a look at some of this, should there be a conversation in terms of salary where we start talking about performance incentives? And if things are moving a certain way that demonstrates higher education in the state of Nevada is constantly on an uptick based on the great leadership of a chancellor, then maybe that's a way that we can bring somebody in and entice the ability for them to earn more based on performance. So it's just a consideration. The other thing that we should be talking about are things that I've already mentioned. The role of the chancellor, maybe we have to have some more conversation about that. I talked to several folks who were past presidents of institutions here because I wanted to get their guidance on some of this. They've certainly have a lot more experience than I do in terms of what some of this looks like. And I started hearing the same things. And that was there are different lanes that a chancellor is in. There's that external part where it's the responsibility of the chancellor to have these networks and conversations with folks who are on the outside of ENCHI. So our chambers, legislators, other stakeholders? And then is the lane for this person simply the manager of the system office that has an awful lot of employees, frankly? What does that look like? And then thirdly, is the position of the chancellor somebody who's supposed to be leading academics? Is that the role of the chancellor? Coupled with holding everyone accountable. Because if it's one thing that Joe and I heard throughout this, it was that this person coming in, not only do they have to have thick skin, but they have to be able to hold presidents, staff members, and everyone down the line accountable for the amount of for whatever is happening with inside our system. And that is the process that we followed according to policy in terms of how we got here. There was one other thing that I wanted to add. And again, the Vice Chair Joe Arascata and I had a lot of conversation about this. And if you'll see, it is our recommendation, based on everything that we've been through, that we bring Patty in as the interim chancellor and at the same time begin the process of a search. But we would need to keep in mind that when we're using this language, begin the process of a search, what we're really talking about is start having the conversations as a board that help support better processes so that then we dive into a search to be able to enable the recruitment that we have to be able to do to bring top-tier folks to Nevada, or at least top-tier folks into some of these positions. And with that, I'll move to questions. Regent Goodman?
I move to approve Patty Charlton as the interim chancellor while we conduct a search for a new chancellor.
That was pretty quick, Regent Goodman. I was prepared to answer some questions from the board, and I'm wondering, Jimmy, here's what I'm wondering. I haven't heard a second yet, but even in that, is it... That was seconded by Regent Tarkanian. So even in that, could we have discussion, and could there be questions that the board has regarding the process we followed as part of the discussion part of this motion?
Jimmy Martinez, for the record, I would want to have the Attorney General answer the opening law questions.
Yes, you could, but I just want to make sure also that, I guess for part of the discussion, that the chair and vice chair, since they conducted the search, that they'll be asking questions, but they'll be abstaining from the vote.
No, I'm going to defer to you and our counsel, but it wasn't set up for the vice chair and myself to ask questions because we brought the nominee. I believe that we've had our question part fulfilled. We would take part of the vote, though, because that's the way we would normally move on a nominee.
So unless your policy dictates otherwise regarding open meeting law, if you basically are privy to additional information, you normally would abstain from the vote. But I guess I'll defer to your general counsel. I don't know if you have a separate policy on that.
Yeah, Jimmy Martinez, for the record, that's not the way our policy is established. The policy is set up to where the chair and the vice chair bring forward a nominee, the full board interviews, and then the full board votes. So I wouldn't say that at this time there's any knowledge that they would have that the rest of the board wouldn't once the interviews and everything is occurring.
Okay, thank you. And again, just a rule of general applicability for open meeting law, the chair and vice chair would abstain. However, it appears that you have something specific to your practice act, which would overrule that. So thank you.
Councilor Martinez, if I may, Chair.
Oh, give me 1 second, Regent Boylan, while we digress,
okay,
just a little bit. Yeah, thank you. So There is then a motion on the floor that was made by Regent Goodman and seconded by Regent Tarkanian to bring Patty Charlton in as the interim chancellor and at the same time begin the search process. Since there was a motion to do this in a second, I will now move this for discussion. And it sounded like Regent Boylan wanted to jump in on the discussion part. So, Regent Boylan?
Yes. Thank you, sir. I appreciate that. Councilor Martinez, you just stated that it is our policy to go against, well, not to go against what the Attorney General is saying, but she suggested something else, that the chair and vice chair do not vote. I think that's grand, actually. But if you're saying it's not in our policy and that they can vote, so could you please state that policy? What number, article, et cetera, since you stated it so confidently, I'd like to know why we cannot follow what the Attorney General's office is suggesting to us. Thank you, sir.
Chair, perhaps we can take a recess and I can sidebar with the Deputy Attorney General.
Thank you. We'll take a five-minute administrative break. We're going to resume where we were. And in order to clarify part of the question, discussion that was brought up, obviously prior to this break, I'm going to ask counsel to weigh in.
So Jimmy Martinez, for the record, after consultation with the Deputy Attorney General, we determined that since the board is an elected body, it's a separately constitutionally created entity, and NRS requires the full board to appoint the chancellor, that, and this is also the way that it's been done for the past 20 years, that it would be, those rules would control, and it would not be a violation of open meeting law for the chair and vice chair to vote. And I just want to make sure I've stated that correctly.
Yes, thank you.
Mr. Consul, Mr. Chair, I have the floor still. My question was not answered, so I'd like to ask Mr. Consul, you said that the NRS states that. Here it comes. Could you please give us the NRS code statement, whichever, that says that the full board will vote on something like this? So just bear with me, humor me. And at the same time, I'd like to say that the Regent Goodman just took the wind out of Chair's presentation because we had questions and it just went boom, flat. But back to it. NRS, sir, could you tell us where that is?
Jimmy Martinez, for the record, NRS 396.210 governs the appointment of the Chancellor.
Okay, say it again, sorry. It says slowly 396.
NRS 396.210.
210. You are too kind. I appreciate that. Thank you, sir.
We're going to move now in terms of the discussion that we want to have. Regent Goodman, you'll begin the discussion.
Thank you. I made this motion because it's the right thing to do. We need to fix the policy. We need to get a chancellor in here that everyone agrees with. I think people that were not on the search committee next time should be on it. We need to fix the policy first. And the thing to do right now is bring in someone who is incredibly capable, who has the ability to do the job, who's already in there right now and has been there. Let's not have this turnover again. Patty is going to just hold this spot for, we saw the contract. That's what we need to do right now. And we need to put the search out at the appropriate time so that presidents can actually apply and feel like they can take a position here, or chancellors or whoever it's going to be. But what we really need to do is we need to have this person here fix the policy that has constrained us in the past and move forward with a search that is properly conducted in a proper timeline and includes everyone and hopefully can be more transparent because we fixed the policy. So that's why I made that motion. Thank you.
Because I know that there's a the technological delay, I want to know if there's anybody in Reno who wanted to be part of this discussion, or if there's a regent online that wanted to ask a question or be part of this discussion. I just,
yes, sir.
It's unusual, but I just don't see any names being jotted down by our chief of staff, and typically that's something that would happen in these meetings.
Chair Brooks, Regent Downs, for the record, I do have a question whenever the time is appropriate.
And after that, Chair Boyle,
Regent Boyle, come on. I think it's appropriate now, Regent Downs.
Clarifying the question, because there were two proposals for the length of contract presented. Clarifying for Regent Goodman, is the contract the 1 year or the one that has kind of the open-ended one?
Well, hi, Regent Downs. Thank you. I actually said that we should appoint Ms. Charlton until we do a search. So for me, I see that as the year contract. So we have her here until we can bring on, until we do the search.
Sheriff.
Go ahead.
Jimmy Martinez.
Or it's option B. I want option B.
For clarification, Regent Downs, the motion is for the appointment of Patty Charlton under what would be considered option B in supplemental information, which allows for the appointment and then also allows for a search process to begin. And as I had mentioned in the presentation, what that really looks like is we would immediately begin with our meetings to talk about what are the policies and procedures and what are the things that we should take a look at in terms of changing so that we move a little bit more successfully as we go through these searches.
Chair Brooks.
Thank you. I appreciate the clarification. Is that, and I just asked this because someone made a statement in public comment about open-ended appointments. Is that allowed? Asking, I guess, to Chief Counsel Martinez, or is option B in compliance with the code?
Jimmy Martinez, for the record, option B is appointment of an interim chancellor and commencing a search. In that instance, the appointment then ends when a permanent chancellor is appointed, and that appointment is the effective date of that appointment. At any time, though, if something else comes up, because it's just an interim position, for example, say the search fails, we're a year and a half into it, and the board wants to terminate that contract. The board does have that authority to terminate under that contract.
Thank you for the clarification.
Regent Brooks.
Regent Goodman.
And Regent Downs, I just want to clarify, my purpose here is to get someone here that can hold the fort until we get someone in this position that can do the job. My main concern is fixing the policy and getting the search started. So I did not have the contracts in front of me. I read them quickly, and I apologize for not knowing that immediately.
No problem. Thank you.
Regent Carballo.
Thank you. I have a few questions. On the face of it, I agree wholeheartedly with this motion. But I do have some questions that I would like to kind of work through. So regarding, you mentioned there's a timeline in our policy that you need to bring back, that the chair and vice chair need to bring back a candidate, 60 days. I wonder if, and so I think that this is the result of that, obviously, as you've said. Is it possible to to suspend that the bylaws with regard to that provision in our policies. To take that time, I see that you the direction that you would like us to go in, and that we have the motion on the table for is one direction, and I just wonder if we can talk through some other directions. And what I'm saying is it possible to suspend any of these bylaws? I believe we can with a vote of not less than 9 members of the board, and then work on the policies. Now, with that, I also have another question in terms of the what are the job responsibilities between an officer in charge and our chancellor per se. I mean, I already know what our chancellor does, and but are there any restrictions to what an officer in charge can do? Thank you.
Compared to
an interim chancellor or any chancellor in that respect, because I know there are times where we've had a permanent chancellor and we've had an officer in charge as well.
So thank you, Regent Carvalho, for the question. I'll address the first part of your question, and then I'll throw to council for the second part of your question. The first part of your question is, could changes take place in terms of how we get things done? The obvious answer is yes, which is why Joe and I strongly believe this is the best direction that we can go in, so that we have continuity with the system. We have an officer in charge who essentially remains in a position to do the things that have already been taking place and provides the board the availability to get together and talk about what are some things that we should look at to change as we start to move forward. Again, I'm having done this for the last 60 days, and certainly Joe Arascata has got 7 months into this. I would say there are things that probably need to be changed, and that should be changed prior to commencing a search. Otherwise, we are essentially a hamster in a wheel, and we're just doing the same thing over and over again, hoping for a great result, but we end up with Band-Aids. And for the second part of your question, I'd ask Jimmy Martinez to weigh in.
Well, before we go to that, I am specifically asking if we can invoke the part of our policy that calls for suspension of some of our bylaws.
Jimmy Martinez, for the record, the vacancy in the Office of the Chancellor is in the code, so that's not able to be suspended. It can be amended, but it takes 2 readings or 30 days advance notice to the presidents and others. So if it can't be suspended is the short answer. The second question is the code also says that when there's a vacancy in the position of chancellor, the officer in charge shall exercise the powers of the chancellor until an acting or interim chancellor is appointed by the board. So in that sense, the officer in charge has the full authority of the chancellor.
So in this situation, what I'm hearing is that based on our governing documents, we must decide if we on an interim or acting chancellor today, because there is no way to suspend code. And because our code says that we need to bring this back, then this is the options that are laid out in the briefing. Well, not necessarily the briefing paper, but the agenda item, the way it's written, there are no other options available to us. Correct.
Jimmy Martinez, for the record, the option today is really only for an interim, because it takes an act of this board to recommend an act that the chair and vice chair come back with an acting or an interim. You give the chair and vice chair direction on which one you want them to bring back. And if the vote fails, then we're back to where we started. And then this board again needs to go through the activity of making the recommendation of an acting or interim or making the motion to move forward with an acting or interim. And then we go back into the 60-day process.
Okay, thank you. I felt that that was a valid clarification to make. Thank you.
And Regent Carvalho, I just wanted to piggyback off of what was just said regarding that third option. As I have spoken to regents who wanted to have conversation with me regarding this, neither the vice chair nor I suggest that third option of handing this back to us and starting the clock, because we will find ourselves in similar circumstances, which to me makes the least sense of the three options. Regent DelCarlo?
Thank you, Chair Brooks. Okay, I have some questions too, and I want to talk about the pay, because when we had our previous interim chancellor who just left us, we started the pay at $300,000. The pay was $300,000. I went and looked. We know we got a 12% pay increase that this board approved, which would have brought the salary, say, up to 336. So I don't know how we got from 336 to what's being offered now, which is 378? I don't have it in front of me. 378.190. So how did we get so far up? I mean, this board's got some tough financial stuff ahead of it, and I worry about optics. And I know that there's other presidents that have not been properly compensated that have been here a long time, and it just doesn't seem right to me. And the board's going to have to address salaries. We've got a couple of presidents that should have had a salary adjustment, and they haven't. Is that because of personalities from previous chancellors? I mean, I don't know, but it's to me, it's not right. And I just want to know how we got such a huge increase.
Regent DelCarlo, let me just address a couple of things real quick. And then again, keep in mind that in this instance, the vice chair and I are not a part of contract negotiations. That would be something that HR and legal are a part of. And so I will have to defer to them about the specific price point. What I will say, and what I believe that we should be discussing in future meetings, is salary compensation as it relates to some of the challenges we have with recruitment. And so there were several, even during that 5-month process, one of the questions that was posed, certainly to Joe and I during the last 60 days, was how was the system setting up a chancellor to come in and oversee 8 institutions so that the institution presidents report essentially to that chancellor, but that individual would be making less than some of the presidents that chancellor is supervising. And so there's certainly different ways to look at that based on the size of the institutions and the amount of work that presidents do at these large institutions. But again, I think what you're hitting on is something that we should be discussing in a future meeting, and I'm not so sure that we can unravel that right now. But I will, again, for the second part of that, I'm going to defer to HR and Jimmy regarding the contract.
Jimmy Martinez, for the record. The only thing I can add to that is that the salary schedule starts at the 378. So what's in the contract is the minimum on the salary schedule.
So the salary schedule changed from the time Dale was the name brought forward by Kathy to now.
And
did this board approve that? I don't remember that. Did approve it?
No,
you weren't on the board last year. What's that process?
I would have to defer to HR, but I don't believe
so. Is HR on the phone today? I hope.
Come to the board.
Sherry, would you mind?
Sherry Olson here for the record.
Where is she?
I'm here.
Oh, okay, great.
Hi, Chair. Thank you. So there was a change in the salary schedules. If you recall, we hired an external consultant to review the overarching salary schedules in 2022. They completed that. They were effective July 1 of 2022. And I actually have the changes in the executive salary schedule, which the chancellor position falls into. And so the minimum prior to that date, the July 1, 22 date, was $312,546. And then following that date, or effective that date, July 1, 22, it increased based on the study that the consultant conducted on our behalf. It increased to $378,198. So the change was a result of a study that that was conducted on our behalf. Did that answer all of your question? I'm sorry.
Thank you for that. But a follow-on question, if I could. So when the, when those salary studies are done, and I guess it was our former acting chancellor Urquiagua that commissioned that study. Did the board vote that, or does that just happen? I mean, I just don't remember. And I went looking through the materials, but it was hard to find. And does everybody's salary then get adjusted up or not?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, if I may.
Or just new people coming in. Or just new people coming in when you're doing the salaries. So if that sounds like... I don't know your title anymore, but Crystal Abba, thank you.
For the record, Crystal Abba, Executive Vice Chancellor and Chief of Staff. So I would refer the board to Title II, Chapter 5, Section 5.5. That section of the code provides for the periodic salary schedule updates. So the salary schedule study that Ms. Olson just referred to was the periodic update. And then there's a regular annual update. This policy, the way it is currently written, and it is being revised, and a revision will be brought to the meeting in September. But essentially what it provides for is that the salary schedules are reviewed every 4 years using an external expert. Then that is approved by the chancellor, and the chancellor notifies the board. So the board was notified. You received, and as you'll recall, last year, when Acting Chancellor Urquiaga came into the role, there were a series of memos that he sent out. And many of those, you've all been asking questions about this recently, and we've been returning those memos that were written a year ago, a little over a year ago. What the practice has been historically is that when the salary schedule is revised, any individuals, and this happens across the system, who fall below the minimum, their salary is adjusted to the minimum to avoid compression. And so that occurred at the system level, and that occurred at every campus, every institution within the system. You received a memo on that as well. I am happy to dig those memos up and resend them so that they're at the top of your inbox if you would like.
Thank you, Executive Vice Chair, and I forget the rest. But anyway, thank you. I knew you were involved with that, and I do remember that, but I never remember voting on it. That's why I had a hard time finding it, and I just couldn't go back into my archives on my iPad. It wouldn't bring it up, because I do remember you were, I knew you were, I remember you were involved because you were the OIC at the time that all occurred. Is that correct?
That is correct, and there is a memo where we outlined the specific policy that was followed, noting the authority of the chancellor to approve those salary schedules. But the requirement is that the chancellor then notify the board.
Okay, I would really appreciate you resending those to all the board, since five are new. And I think it would really help us to understand that better, especially when we do look at salaries, because honestly, we get questioned by the public. I have people many times saying how bloated and overpaid higher ed is. And I try to explain to them that we do these salary studies every 4 years, as you said, and we have to be competitive to attract the best and brightest talent. I get that. And it was no different in my corporate career, but we didn't do it every 4 years. We did it every year because because we were part of the big three automakers and we had to stay competitive or lose your best talent. So I do get that. And I appreciate you clarifying that today, Crystal, and being at our meeting.
And Mr. Chairman, if I may, just to put the boards, because this has been a continual topic. I mean, I've been in the system for a long time and salary schedule updates are controversial. It doesn't matter what the process is. It is never, it's never smooth. But to that end, based on the feedback that we received in 22, the way the salary schedules, the presentation of the revisions that will come to you next week at the September quarterly meeting, any adjustments that are recommended by the independent compensation expert are going to be presented to the board. So in the future, this board will have the opportunity to not only understand the process that the consultant went through, but what recommendations they made. So you'll have that opportunity going forward. Thank you.
Excuse me, and when did you say that was coming to us?
At your next quarterly board meeting.
September?
It's on the agenda that's currently posted for September.
Okay, I haven't read it all. Agenda. I haven't read it all yet. Thank you.
Regent Brown.
Thank you. Regent Brown, for the record. I think this has already been clarified, but I wanted to just reiterate it for my own peace of mind. So the motion on the table is actually to approve Officer in Charge Charlton as acting chancellor and start a new search? No. Interim. Words matter. Sorry. Interim. Thank you. Interim. And start a new search? I think I personally would rather not stipulate the and a new search part just yet, because we haven't had a conversation about, with any intentionality, on what we're looking for in the next chancellor. Because hopefully this next person is permanent. It's here for the long haul. Everything okay over there? Okay. Sorry. So I just wanted to get a clarification on the motion. It did happen so quickly. Are we approving interim chancellor and starting a new search, or are we allowing ourselves to have a discussion on what we're looking for and then start a new search when it's appropriate?
Thank you, Regent Brown, for the question. So it's actually both. And the reason that it's both is because when we talk about the search process, we can't commence a search without first diving into policy. And so if we're setting this up so that the board has time to be able to take a look at what that policy is, this motion would allow for that. Because in order to start a search, we would first have to examine, if you want to say, what it is that we're looking for, and what I would say more importantly, what does the policy say? And what are the things in terms of our procedures that we have to change? Particularly, are there conversations we should have about communications? Are there things that should take place when somebody applies for a position? Is there a way for others to know, you know, that this is a person that has applied, rather than we can't have those type of conversations? Now, whether or not that can come to fruition, I don't know. But what I'm suggesting is there are certainly a lot of things that we should be talking about prior to commencing that search. But this, again, the motion for the search process, the search doesn't happen without those conversations. And frankly, our next special meeting, which I believe is September 28th, this will be a part of that conversation.
Okay. I like that, and thank you. And I'm happy to hear that, you know, we want to have these conversations, because I do think that this process happened without having those conversations. It was the process we had this year. So I'm glad that we're all recognizing that we're living in kind of like a Groundhog's Day scenario where we're going through the motions and not actually changing the outcome to have something permanent and have something that has intentionality for our system. So if there's a way, I would personally feel a little bit more comfortable with the scenario of approving Ms. Charlton today, having the conversation and at that point starting the search. And I know that's nitpicking, but I also understand that process isn't always, if it's not said very clearly, it does not happen on the back end, or it could not happen. I'm not going to pass judgment overarching. And so I do want to make sure that we have those conversations and then start the search in that order. Even if the intentionality is to do that, I want to make sure that we are very clear that the process will happen in that way. So
that makes sense. So it sounds like what you're asking is perhaps if the board isn't so inclined, a friendly amendment, which would simply just state that while the motion is to appoint Patty Charlton and to conduct a search, prior to the search, the board will have conversation and time to take a look at policy. And that was just kind of like, you know, from the hip in terms of the language, but it sounds like we'd want all three of those things to take place as we move forward, which does make sense. Because while I believe we can't have a search without doing the first thing, perhaps somebody says, hey, we didn't really vote on that. We didn't vote to have these conversations. I don't know, but we might as well lock it in.
And I think similar to the last meeting, we are actually going to have to pull the motion, pull the second, and then restate it, and then do it again. Oh, that's your job, sorry.
No.
Actually, you can amend if the second agrees to the amendment. So if the first agrees and the second agrees.
That's just different.
Regent Tarkanian, you were the second on this motion. Would you support, just before we hear from Regent Goodman, would you support that friendly amendment that includes the conversations regarding policy prior to a search beginning? Regent Tarkanian, unfortunately, you're muted at your end, and so we can't hear you. I think what we'll do is, because I want it on the record that Regent Tarkanian is amenable to this, perhaps we allow Regent Tarkanian a few more moments to unmute herself, and then we'll go to Regent Goodman. Regent Goodman? Hi. Oh.
Am I unmuted?
Yes, Regent Tarkanian, you are unmuted.
Thank you. I said that if Regent Goodman felt that was appropriate, that I would go along with that.
Thank you, Regent Tarkanian. Regent Goodman, would you like to restate your motion?
Is that the proper term, restating the motion, or am I adding a friendly amendment?
I thought it was a friendly amendment.
Go ahead.
It's fine. The term doesn't matter.
Just okay. Thank you. Okay. Well, I would like to add a friendly amendment, and the motion would rather state, I move to approve Patty Charlton as the interim chancellor while we have a formal review of policy and conduct a search for a new chancellor.
I would like to just add,
with option B.
Thank you, Regent Goodman. Go ahead, Regent Tarkanian.
I would just like to add that it's obvious from what's been happening that we don't have a clear-cut professional way of being able to do this, and that we do need to now, as we move forward, ensure that we do have that type of guideline, because we don't have it now. And we certainly aren't able to do it as professionally as we should until we get it.
Okay. Regent Brager?
Thank you. Susan Breger for the record. I'm going to just state why I would be in favor of this motion is that Vice Chancellor Ms. Charlton has the wealth of experience and knowledge, and I would hope that we could all come together during this time frame. She knows NSHE, she knows the board, she sat through a number of meetings, she understands from CSN to the universities and everything in between. And I love the motion that we can determine where we're going before we go there, which would make a huge difference in what happened last time. And pay scales, I just looked at, we just got the new Giant magazine. I don't know how many but looked at it yet. But if you look at that, our pay scale is so low across the whole United States. And it has been for years. We've been, I mean, I've been involved in education. Now I'm going to do what they did to Patty, 50 years. And we were only 12, but at that time, no. But in all seriousness, this is a serious matter. We need to figure out an incrementally, not just every 4 years, how we get there. So it doesn't mean you can't get the very best person at, you know, $300,000 because they're a caring, stimulated, self-motivated person. But unfortunately, people look at money, and there, some of them were $1 million a year. I was like shocked. I'm like, wow, I went into the wrong profession. But our big $80 a meeting, you know, really doesn't hardly compare to that. So we're all here for the love of education. We need to unite, and we need to make sure. That's why last meeting I brought up that we need monthly meetings, and if they do not happen, look at it as a free day or a different work day. Don't look at it, oh, darn, it got canceled. Just let's have something that we know is standardized and not look at his, go back, historically hasn't worked. Let's get rid of the past, go to the future, and make sure that we are coming together to discuss students' education, where we want to go with a chancellor. How do we get more funding? How do we get ahead of the legislative session next time? That's what we should be doing in this next year.
Regent Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a few comments. It's really encouraging to hear yourself and other colleagues echo about the change being necessary. I was trying to bring that forward on my agenda for the since January, February, March, and it has been denied by this body. So I'm really encouraged to hear that we need a change in the things that we do and how we do this process. Secondly, there's a calendar that we need to be aware of when you are looking for a chancellor, the academic calendar. We can't start the search in January, February. We can't start the search in February and expect somebody to be able to come on board in June. There's a flow that has to happen in order for us to get valid candidate or a good number of candidates. This last search started at the wrong time. You know, a lot of candidates pulled out because they're like, hey, we're doing this. We have to start, you know, August 4th. And they had obligations with their previous institution. And we wouldn't respect them if they didn't complete those obligations with their previous institutions. So we need to be very aware that there is a timeline, and it's an academic timeline, and it doesn't wait for us. So that's my my 2 cents worth for the motion. And I think that's everything. I think that's it. Thank you.
Regent Boylan.
Thank you, Chair. I appreciate that. Firstly, I'm really glad that Ms. Charlton is accepting this position. But before I get there, just humor me. I'd like to say thank you to you and Vice Chair Harris Carter. I believe in giving the devils their due. You did a lot, tons of work to get there. The process is completely screwed, and the process needs to be changed. You weren't paid any extra money, I know that. And if you were, I'd like you to share it with me, but that's another thing altogether. So I do believe that we need to thank you both for all the extra work you've done. Now, again, I was going to talk about some things that Regent Downs and Regent Brown said much better than me. So I'll leave that, and I'll just mention here that I am in favor of going with the new motion. And I thank you guys for all the work you did. Thank you so much. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Regent Boylan. Regent Del Carlo.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to say, too, I support this motion. And to me, it's about the process, not the person. I think our process is just awful. I feel like we get strangled as regents with our handbook. And I have talked to our legal counsel how desperately we need that book to be gone completely through. Whoops, I got so excited. And that it's going to take a commitment from this board, and we'll have to hire somebody. People that are currently working do not have the time to do that work. But our handbook and code completely need to be gone through. Oh, it's going to take a lot of time for somebody to do it. Maybe we end up having a subcommittee among the regents part of that too. But and I agreed with what Regent Carvalho was saying. I mean, we should be able to control the book, not the book control us. I mean, it's just craziness that we get into these situations. And then for the chair and the vice chair to have 60 days to come up with a name. I mean, it's summertime. Everybody's busy. I am so tired of getting last-minute supplemental stuff. I mean, I think we all are. We got this agenda item 8:15 last Thursday morning. So you got Thursday, you got Friday. I really don't want to bother people on the weekends. I truly don't. We had Monday, and we were getting emails as late as 9:26 last night. I don't think it's right. I don't think it's fair to the board. We are here to do the public work. They trust us to do good governance. They trust us to make sound decisions. We represent all the voting people out there. And I don't want to have a gun to my head all the time. So we really got to redo this process. Get Patty in today. Get some stability. We all like stability. Fix the process. Do the search. Thank you.
Okay, I don't have notes for any other regents who would care to be part of this discussion. And so at this time, we're going to move for a roll call vote. The motion on the floor was made by Regent Goodman. It is to appoint Patty Charlton as our interim chancellor and conduct a search. However, prior to that search, there will be formal board conversations that take place regarding our policies and procedures. This motion was seconded by Regent Tarkanian, and we've completed all of our discussion regarding this agenda item. Carrie, please take a roll call vote. If you are in favor of this, please signify by saying aye or yay, and if you oppose this, please signify by saying no or nay.
Regent Perkins?
Aye.
Regent Tarkanian?
Aye.
Vice Chair Arascotta?
Aye.
Regent Boylan?
Aye.
Regent Brager?
Aye.
Chair Brooks?
Aye.
Regent Brown?
Aye.
Regent Carvalho?
Aye.
Regent Cruz Crawford?
Aye.
Regent Del Carlo?
Aye.
Regent Downs?
Aye.
Regent Goodman?
Aye.
Regent McMichael?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously.
Thank you. Congratulations, Interim Chancellor. What I'd like to do is offer a few moments for any remarks that you would like to have. And then following your remarks, we will have a 5 to 10 minute administrative break.
All right. Well, first, thank you to all of the board. And I just want to tell you this is a very humbling experience for me. I have been a part of this system while as an employee for almost 30 years. I started my higher education education at CSN. It was actually Clark County Community College. Dr. Zaragoza may not know that name. But it is very humbling, and that it goes going back almost 40 years. I thank my friends for making me even older than I am by saying it was 50 years ago because some of them did know me in high school. But in all seriousness, I just have to tell you, I take this role very, very seriously. We have amazing institutions, fantastic presidents. You have over 100,000 students that are in our institutions today. We owe all that we can do to make this the best experience for them. So I am committed to working directly with you, making the improvements that you see that are necessary to get a successful search underway. And I want to thank all of you for your steadfast commitment, not just to our students, to our faculty, to our staff, and to our community. You are so very passionate, or else you would not be here in this room. And so I want to thank you and appreciate your vote of confidence today. And I'm looking forward to working with all of you. So thank you.
Thank you for your remarks, Interim Chancellor. We will now take a 5 to 10 minute administrative break. To our last several agenda items. So if everyone wants to grab their seats, we'll begin. Okay, so we will now move to agenda item number 4. This is being brought back to the board. This is the approval of the proposed employment agreement for our Chief of Staff, Carrie Nikolajewski. The board took action to appoint Ms. Nikolajewski as the permanent Chief of Staff to the Board of Regents, and that was to be done effective at its next meeting. At which time this contract would be, you know, approved, discussed, and taken a look at. So essentially, that's what we're doing with agenda item number 4. And to be able to really have effective conversation regarding pricing, the contract, how this came about, I think it's important that we hear from HR. And so I will ask Sherry Olson to weigh in on the things that we are looking at specifically to compensation. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Sherry Olson here for the record. I think it's important to keep in mind that you have policy that the board has set that kind of directs us in the salary for this position, the placement of this position, and I have followed those accordingly. In Title IV, Chapter 3, Section 2.1D, it talks about this position being placed as an executive position. In my recommendation, I have placed it in the lower or the lowest of the three executive grades. That's the NC Executive 3. This is a longstanding policy. It's been in place prior to 2005. That is part of the reason that I classified it at this level. Additionally, I looked at the job responsibilities and did a position review as normal practice of human resources. The second piece, as far as the placement on the salary schedule, in Title IV, Chapter 3, Section 27.2, there is direction about where someone should be placed in the salary schedule at the initial placement. So that talks about someone being hired in or placed at the between the minimum and the medium of the position or the salary schedule. And my recommendation is at the minimum of the NC Executive 3. To further enforce or to assure that my recommendation was accurate and on target, I worked with an external, as you are all aware, we worked with an external consultant to do some HR work for us. They reviewed our salary schedule, placement of all of our positions, and asked them to take a deeper dive into this position. And they shared a write-up for us, and they are in agreement with the classification of this position. So those are the three pieces that I'd like you to keep in mind as you have this conversation.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to make a motion.
Just one moment. Regent Boylan, Thank you for clarifying where we are on the pay scale. We appreciate that. Regent Boylan, go ahead and offer us your comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's not so much a comment, but a motion that this item either be removed from this agenda, like you did the previous item that you removed, with even less information available to the regents. And I think this item needs to be revisited, or it should be tabled, or postponed, I mean, for a further time so that everybody gets all the information. Now, my remarks. We have heard from now interim chancellor. She sent us the email that said, just because you have a certain title does not mean you get a certain pay grade. I am looking at the chief of staff for DRI. That person makes only $132,000. This is vulgar, the money we are trying to pay Ms. Nikolowski for the work she does compared to the other one is chief of staff and strategy NSU. Makes only $168,000. There's another one that makes only $140,000 with just as much or more responsibilities and work. In my opinion, this is a total non-justification and a waste of taxpayers' money. All of you regents have received all the information, and I would appreciate if you support this and do your due diligence and make sure that we do the right thing for what we have been elected. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, Regent Boyland,
should I state my motion?
I am just so you know, and this will obviously regents can weigh in. I am not inclined to pull this agenda item as it is different and separate than the agenda item that was pulled at the start of this meeting. Additionally, the reason that this agenda item is here is for the conversations that the board would like to have regarding compensation with the employment agreement. And so tabling this or having a conversation at another time, I'm pretty confident that we would find ourselves exactly where we are right now. But that's my perspective on this. However, you did state a motion, and I will now look for a second for this motion.
Mr. Chair, just for clarification for the record, Regent Boylan said a lot when he made his motion, so if you can just ask him to restate his motion. And I do want to also reiterate, just based on what you said too, is pursuant to open meeting law, the chair does have the authority to either, in his own discretion, to either table an agenda item, remove an agenda item, or to postpone or continue an agenda item.
Thank you, ma'am. And yes, I know all that he can do that. That's why my motion is to postpone this item so that all the regents have all the time to investigate all the emails that we have sent stating why this amount of salary is a ridiculous amount, and we are just throwing away taxpayers' money.
Regent Boylan, I don't mean to interrupt you, but can you please restate the motion? Right. Just please give us the motion.
I will. I have a question. Yes.
Go ahead.
Let me start from the beginning. I make a motion that we postpone this item and bring it back to, and I'm not going to say the next meeting, but bring it back again after all the regents have had more time to digest and analyze the information that's out there.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
There's a motion on the floor to postpone item agenda number 4, the employment agreement for Chief of Staff to the Board of Regents. Is there a second to this motion?
I'll second it.
This motion is seconded by...
I have a question.
Excuse me. This motion is seconded by Regent Del Carlo. Is there any discussion regarding this agenda item. Regent Boylan, would you like to lead the discussion?
Yes, sir. Thank you. You're too kind, sir. Like I stated, we have this nice chart that was sent to us by human resources, well, through now Interim Chancellor Charlton. If you look closely at that chart, and you will see all the different salaries that are paid to all the different chief of staff in the system, and you see all their responsibilities and subordinates, and who the supervisor is for that position. I just stated earlier, and I said it too much, I guess, but they're only making things like 132,000, 140,000, 168,000. Are you telling me that all those employees and all those chiefs of staff, are doing half the work that we think is office manager position? Ms. Nikolowski, are you telling me, or is anyone else trying to suggest that they're making half the money and doing half the work?
So here's what I would offer, Regent Boylan. As much as I appreciate the openness of conversations that we can have in a public setting, I'm not so sure that that question really posed to our chief of staff is beneficial for the purposes of our discussion. I believe that we clearly understand your position in this, and I thank you for starting the conversation off. But I will now move down the long list I have of regents who would like to also participate in this conversation, and we'll move to Regent Downs.
Thank you, Chair Brooks. Regent Downs, for the record. I'd like to ask Ms. Olson, if you can give us a little bit of history of the Chief of Staff position, both with its placement on the salary schedule historically and maybe as it has changed names throughout the years.
Thank you, Regent Downs. Sherry Olson, for the record. So this position, the core responsibilities of the position have not changed significantly over the years. The pieces that have come and gone, the special counsel piece, did warrant at different times where the position was placed on the executive salary schedule, whether it was the 2, which is in placement with the vice chancellors and a few of the presidents. Other times, it's placed at the NSHE executive level 3, which is placed with the associate vice chancellor currently. Over the years, the position has had titles such as Chief Administrative Officer, Secretary of the Board, Chief Executive Officer, Chief Executive Officer and Special Counsel, and Chief of Staff and Special Counsel to the Board. The Special Counsel piece was not added to the title and to the responsibilities until 2009. The position was in place for many years prior to that. And I just want to, if I can, for a moment, address some of the concerns that Regent Boylan brought up. And that is that this position is unique in its nature. It reports to 13 individuals, where those other chief of staffs report to one. It could be the president. It could be a vice president at the institution. And I'm not here to say that their responsibilities are of less complexity. However, this role is unique, not only in the reporting line, but also in the responsibilities. You all received the full PDQ. You saw the PDQ when the special counsel piece was included. And you can see that there is a wide variety of complex responsibilities that are required in this role.
Get me a
Coke idea. Regent Downs, does that answer your question?
Yes, I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Regent Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Along those same lines, I guess I want to echo what was said earlier. It's really hard to make these decisions when we don't get the documents till the 11th hour and we don't have time to go through them in their entirety and digest them. Why wasn't the position review, this is rhetorical, why wasn't the position review included in our board pack? And also, where is that report from CBIZ that they did a year ago about this position? And I think it's kind of disingenuous that when you said that CBIZ did the review, they did it as a joint position. They did it as chief of staff plus being a lawyer. And from our last year, from our searches, we advertised this position as such. The last person in this position was a lawyer who had to practice in Nevada for 5 years and et cetera, et cetera. And they had over 20 years of experience. So it just seems a little bit high to pay the person that's going to do, I don't even know half because you didn't give me the percentages that I asked for earlier. I don't even know how that if you're not going to do all of the position, how you can get all of the pay. And from the documents that we did receive, it says the advice and counsel is 35% of the job. So even if you multiply that out from 208,000, 35% comes up to about 130-esque. And that's 35% of the job was counsel. And that's from the documents that we actually received. So just based on that calculation, it just seems really kind of outrageous to pay someone. It's nothing against the person. It's the position that I'm talking about. I think Ms. Nikolajewski is very competent and will do a great job, as she has done for the past couple years. However, the compensation needs to be commensurate with the duties. And if you cannot be, if you're not a lawyer, then this this salary it seems a little bit inflated.
You know, I wanted to call attention to supplemental information that we received. And maybe this is part of what you were saying in terms of receiving something late. Frankly, I have to tell you that happens. And sometimes it's a result of shortness of staff. And sometimes it may not be. But what I would offer is that there are certainly other governance bodies, particularly those who meet in Carson City, that sometimes are offered a piece of supplemental information an hour prior to a meeting. The great thing for us is that we can have conversations and try to digest and have conversation about things that we receive even at the last hour. If we take a look at the Huron report that was provided on the 28th, today's the 29th, it's possible that this information would have come to the board late because it was done yesterday. And so in that report, it clearly states that the person who was the consultant who did the study, the funding study, states that he concurs with the current grade assessment of NCHE Executive 3 and all of the reasons why he does that. So in terms of the conversation that we were just having regarding supplemental information, I thought it was important to point that out, that something is there. Regent Goodman?
Well, can I respond?
Sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for that information. However, this item, this isn't the first time this item's come before us. We've all asked questions about this item, and it should have, if we were asking questions, then it should have been included in our supplemental. And with the experience that's sitting all on this dais right here, we should have had that information long in advance. We got the notice about the meeting. We should have had all that information at the same time. That's all I'm saying. And that's all I'm saying.
Regent Goodman.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to make a few comments. First of all, it's difficult to change the rules when you're in the 11th hour of the game. This consultant was hired by our previous acting chancellor, Eric Yaga. These pay scales were given to HR, and HR is just following protocol. I think what we need to do in the future is we need to prioritize. If we don't think that certain administrative or executive positions should make as much money, then we need to make sure we have that conversation with the said consultant. It's egregious, and it's borderline bullying what's happening right now. I don't think it's appropriate. We have a consultant that has provided pay scales a consultant that was hired before I was here and four of my other colleagues. So this person provided these pay scales. HR is following this. This is what we call a process. So if you want to change it, then let's move forward and change it for the next person. That's number one. Number two, Regent Boylan, I was chief of staff for the mayor, and I made $60,000. And I am perfectly fine giving Ms. Nikolajewski the amount of money that she wants. So just know I've been there, and I made 60 grand. So there's that. And finally, we have a morale issue here that no one seems to notice. Everybody shoots stuff at staff. I need this. I need that. I need it turned around quickly. It's unacceptable. These are people with lives. And the fact of the matter is we need to show them more respect. Staff is important. This whole thing doesn't run without staff, without faculty. It doesn't run. And so we need to really take a step back and be more respectful to the people that are running this show. And that's all I have to say.
Regent Cruz Crawford.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to say something, Mr. Check, since she mentioned me.
Regent Boylan, we'll absolutely provide you the time to have additional comments, but I think it's important that we hear from regents who haven't spoken yet. Regent Del Carlo.
Thank you, sir. You're too kind.
Thank you, Chair Brooks. And just a little clarification on a statement. You just said the legislature, people at the legislature get things at the 11th hour or last minute, but don't forget, they do not follow the open meeting law. There's a big difference there. So I just want to clarify that. One of the concerns that I have is past action that the board did take. And so I didn't realize until just recently that this position was separated or put together in 2009, where we added the legal counsel to the chief of staff job. And then this board voted to separate that. So I think we're kind of finding our way through that new process. And I voted for it. I am having a little bit of buyer's remorse. And my question is, if this process does not work for us as a board and we decide to put the positions back together, at that point, if our chief of staff is paid at this rate, does she then go back to being the deputy chief of staff at a lower rate? I mean, I would like to know that, because it's very possible that if the board doesn't feel that this position was properly, or not properly, but we're not getting what we wanted, we thought we were going to get, having two separate positions, because it's really hard to have two masters when you think about it, because the lawyer that Chief General Counsel Jimmy Martinez is going to hire works for him, but then a part of him is going to work for the 13 of us. So I think down the road, I don't know. I'm looking in my crystal ball. I don't know how well this is going to work. I was willing to give it a try, but if it doesn't work, then what happens if we as a board want to put it back together? And then what happens to our chief of staff then? I just want to answer to that as best as you can tell. Thank you.
Regent Del Carlo, I think perhaps another way of looking at this is, how do we have the conversation regarding counsel, and what does that look like, and where does that counsel sit in terms of the board and the system office? Because the positions have been separated, and so I don't think that there is an issue regarding delivery, work, or anything that would cause pause for the board to have a discussion about the performance of our chief of staff. It sounds like the concern is, what are we doing with counsel? Because I think there are certainly demonstrated moments that it would be beneficial for us to have counsel that does report specifically to the board and is working for the board. And frankly, those were some of the conversations that we were having when we voted to split this position. We just, as a board, have not come back to what does counsel look like for us. And perhaps that's something that we should address sooner rather than later. Because if once that happens, then I think it puts everything at ease. Because again, I don't believe that this has anything to do with performance.
You honestly didn't answer my question, because I was saying, you're right, and maybe we shouldn't even be having this vote today. Maybe we give it more time to see how we like it, because, like I said, I'm having buyer's remorse, all right? And so what happens to our chief of staff if this board decides to put the positions back together? Does the position then go back to being a deputy? That's all I'm asking, yes or no?
I presented this in a different way that was reasonable to the conversation that's being had regarding a specific concern, but I see that that was not obviously articulated well enough from me, and so what I'll do is defer to our legal counsel, who maybe can answer that very specific question about unwinding what the board has already done.
Jimmy Martinez, for the record. So in this position, it would be a contract position, so we would have to go through the notice provisions that are in the code for non-renewal of a contract.
By non-renewal of a contract, are you saying our legal counsel's on a contract?
I'm sorry. No, I was speaking specifically to the chief of staff position. Were you to approve the contract today, then the chief of staff would have an employment contract like all the other employees in the system, and then you would go through the same process as any other employee to end that contract. So in our handbook, there's a notice of non-reappointment provision. So when you are ending an employee's contract, then you provide notice and that the contract is going to end as of this date, and then you make the revisions to the policy and hire a new position and create the new position at the time.
So at a future time, if the board votes to put the positions back together, then the board then sends the chief of staff a non-renewal letter back to a previous position, and then we've put it back together. Is that what you're saying?
So I think we were talking about are a couple different kind of lanes. So there would be the board action that puts the positions back together. So the board would have to vote to do that.
Right.
Then the board would have to issue the notice of non-reappointment to end a contract, and then there could be an offer at that time. But those are there's a lot of different ways it can go. There's not only one way it can go, but the where it all starts is there with the following the policy for ending an employment contract.
Okay, and I just want to know, Carrie, this is not personal. You do a wonderful job. You really do. But I'm having buyer's remorse about the fact that we've separated it and we don't have our own legal counsel.
Can I do a point of order here real quickly? I feel like we're discussing three that was taken off the agenda item, and if I could get an opinion on that. I don't want you to not talk, but while we're talking about special counsel and chief of staff and what we're doing, when we took that off, are we getting too deep into that is what I'm wondering?
I don't mind
hearing it, but I like to stay legal.
Yeah, Jimmy Martinez, for the record, I think we're right on that line of getting
not
off topic.
Not against the conversation, but against the item.
Yeah, I think it's at that point where it's relevant because of the positions having been joint, but I don't want to get too far into talking about that position so we don't violate open meeting law.
Did counsel answer your question, Regent Del Carlo?
I'm good, thank you.
Regent Cruz Crawford?
Regent Cruz Crawford, for the record. I have a question about timelines. I'm getting a little confused. When the position was switched and the chief of staff was separated, was the consulting put on administrative three position done after that change or prior?
Chair Sherry Olson here. I can answer that question.
I think we're doing that.
Thank you.
So
when we hired the consultant Huron to review our positions, the incumbent of this role was in interim, and the PDQ that was in place was for the previous role, the deputy chief of staff. That is the PDQ that they reviewed. So that is partly why some of the timeline is off. In March, when the board, when you made the decision to split the two roles, Human Resources was directed to review the position. That included updating the PDQ and preparing a review of the position. That was completed. Because I understand the importance of this role to the board, we went ahead and asked Huron to do a deeper dive into the updated PDQ, which was for the chief of staff solely. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, that's what I thought. So my concern that I'd like to put on the record, I do view myself as a subject matter expert when it comes to equity in pay, since I do that on the side. My concern was with her on doing an equity study with pay. I looked into their work and never have they done anything like that. I'm concerned that we picked that consulting firm either in regard to not having adequate resources, either financially or knowing a credible equity pay firm. I did bring it to the IDEA committee to have a firm that does do equity studies and has software that is credible to run those studies. When I did ask Huron what software they run their equity study through, they said they used some Google spreadsheets and just analyzed that data on their own with really no true understanding, in my opinion, of being able to explain that. So I would like to put on the record that I'm a little concerned about the firm. I do like the CBIZ firm that we've used they are seem like a very credible source, but I would like on the record that I believe that that company is not credible, does not work in that field, and quite frankly very disappointed that they took on this work knowing that about themselves. Thank you.
Regent Breger.
Thank you. Susan Breger for the record. I'm for the motion because having worked in different positions and served in different positions, it's a big job with 13 people, 13 different personalities interacting with all the other staff that they interact with. And we keep talking about we don't want to spend a lot of money. But we can't discuss three, even though I feel like that's what I heard a lot of here, is that I really believe with all the legal counsel that I've worked with that Mr. Martinez gives us accurate information. We're not attorneys to interpret it something different. I'm not an attorney. I'll speak about myself. But now we're saying when we do have that discussion in the future that possibly, even though I did ask for an agenda item that said we would need a supermajority if we wanted to change something, we changed within a year, which I think would be a healthy thing to do. And if people get a supermajority, then so be it. I would still like that agenda item to come forward. But I think that we need to move forward on this today because we have studied it, we have looked at it, we've known the pay, and I do think we're well represented. And I don't believe Mr. Martinez has any reason to other than tell us and speak legal truth. And I just am very comfortable with the process at this point in time.
Regent Downs.
Thank you, Chair Brooks. Regent Downs for the record. So I just would like just to summarize my understanding of the situation. And Ms. Olson, if you can correct me if I misunderstood something. In the past, this position was an executive grade 3. And then changes were made where it added system counsel or some kind of general counsel to it, and it may have changed to a level 2, And then so separating that out makes it appropriate, as it used to be, a grade 3 despite whatever grade 3 comes out in the salary. But that is consistent with how it was placed in the past.
Thank you, Regent Downs. Yes, that's correct. Okay, it's gone back and forth.
Okay, so this is, I don't see this as something that's that out of the ordinary. This is just consistent with the salary increase, I think, that surprises everyone. The salary increase based on the salary study completed in 2022. So I know that seems like a lot of money, but as long as we're consistent with board policy and placement, I don't see this as a problem.
Regent Carvalho.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have a few questions or concerns. I have several of them, so I don't know if you want me to just lay them all out first, or can we take one at a time?
I think one at a time, because I'm not sure who would be best to answer some of those questions. And I'd rather.
Did you have any of that salad, Shamithia? Yes. Did you have any of that salad?
I think good. First, I do have some concerns regarding what effect this may have on other chiefs of staff throughout the system. I hear what Ms. Olson says, that there are differences in this position versus other chiefs of staff, but on the pay scale, it does for other positions specifically lay out those positions in the salary schedule. So I do have a concern about that, and that's I think that's something that we must consider with this. Also, I hear what Regent Goodman is saying, and I certainly don't want to come across as being a bully by asking for information, but I feel like we weren't given some of the information that had been asked for and explicitly stated in previous meetings that some of this information was going to come to the board. In April, in the briefing paper, it says right there that the PDQ would come to the board at a later date. And then it didn't come in July. We asked for it again, and it didn't come in this meeting either. And so I think it was appropriate for us to ask for that, because I think when this whole split began, I think that there was a reasonable assumption by many members of this board that we would have an opportunity to discuss what this position looked like, this position as just chief of staff without the added special counsel position, is something that hasn't been seen in quite a while. And like I said, it was reasonably assumed by many on this board that we would have the opportunity to discuss what this meant. And the PDQ was a part of that. Also, I have some concerns regarding the briefing paper for this item. It feels, in a way, a certain chilling effect that is taking place with this agenda item, so that we don't ask many questions. In the briefing paper regarding this item, number 7, it says bullet points to support request/recommendation. It says the board should act only upon recommendations of the chancellor and the chancellor's staff, and in conformance with applicable statutes and policies in all matters that come before it. NC Handbook Title 4, Chapter 1, Section 2.3c. But in the handbook, where it states specifically the under Article 4 of Title 1, it says right there in Section 5 that the chief of staff shall be compensated in the amount determined by the board. And so I think it's an appropriate conversation for us to have as a board, this information regarding the salary schedule is important to us, but again, it was reasonably assumed that there was an opportunity for the board to decide exactly what the chief of staff position looked like outside of anybody in that position. Again, that was in April, and then July we voted on somebody to be in that position. But I don't want to say that that now becomes a moot point, because there are issues that I wouldn't say issues, but there are points to the PDQ, the job description, that I think are not always addressed in a way that many on the board feel that the chief of staff should be doing. And there was the opportunity for that, and I feel like those concerns have been just pushed aside so that we can just move forward with the appointment of a person to this position. And again, as has been stated by others, this isn't about Carrie's performance at all. It's about the process of how we split this position and how we could make any changes that might be an improvement for us. So I did just blow by all of that, and so I apologize for that, but they all kind of blended into each other. So I'll leave it at that for now. Thank you.
Okay. Regent Brown?
Thank you. Regent Brown, for the record. So my hesitation goes back to the fact that we just really haven't had this conversation about what we want from the position. I'm repeating myself from earlier today, living in Groundhog's Day, insanity, doing the same thing over and over, hoping for a different outcome. And I think when I was going back and I was putting my notes together, the only discussion that we've actually had was like back in April when we were highlighting what we wanted from the position. The scope of that conversation was to whether we were going to split the position or not. I have personally asked for a summary of what we discussed that day and never received it. I think that is could be a good framework for this conversation. Not this agenda today, but it could have been a conversation for this agenda item, because it is the position itself. What do we want as a board of 13 in this position? And when we're talking about the position, I feel like it's important for me to highlight some things that I found on the internet that are in relation to what HR shared. Because I don't actually know if we are being consistent. And before this very meeting, this information was not shared with us. So I had to rely on my own ability to Google and scrape the internet. And what I found, in addition to the minutes that were shared by my colleague, so it looked like the scope was actually expanded in September 2009. From my research, it also looks like adding the general counsel to the role is when it actually converted from administrative to executive. In two different job postings dated 2015 and 2001, we list this position with a minimum requirement of a JD degree. And I really just feel strongly that now that we are, from April, agreed to remove the general counsel part from the title and the subsequent minimum JD requirement, I do not believe that the position stands on its own in the same structure that it was previous to that meeting. Going back to what Regent Cruz Crawford said, if this expert organization doesn't actually have any expertise in this equitable study, then I'm not sure. I'm not really sure if it's fair to say that it stays in the executive structure. And I would like the conversation, or at least I would have liked to have the conversation about what we want from the position. Does it stay in the executive? Does it go to administrative? And I think I just want to reiterate that my hesitation is that we've never had this conversation and we just keep moving forward. And then we have these conversations in public saying, oh, well, I wish we would have had a different conversation, but we keep moving forward. And I think we're just in a cycle of, you know, we're a self-fulfilled prophecy that we are not actually achieving what we need to be achieving, and we're just arguing and talking about the same thing over and over.
I just wanted to bring up one thing in terms of some of the things that have been said with how this moved from legal to not legal. This position without any legal duties was classified as executive or three executive by action of the board in January of 2007. Legal duties were estimated at 15%, and then they were added in 2009. And it came with a stipend. And it sounds like there is probably some areas where perhaps there could be some guidance with what is in our PNG right now regarding what's being defined as executive salary. And maybe there's some, you know, enlightenment that our new interim chancellor can provide in terms of some of the questions that have been raised today regarding what this looks like.
Okay, so for the record, Patty Charlton, interim chancellor. And so first, in regards to the PNG manual and the placement of executives, I would refer to the Human Resources Office, as they are the experts as they look at placement of positions. There's a skill set that's specific to personnel policy regarding that factor. I think that's the main one at point right now. I think the other conversations about the how we got to where we are on the job description are a little bit more confusing on what the details, I think, of what people have said of having input. And so I'd like to ask Ms. Olson, if she could, to talk about the placement of positions and if there's a rubric and or how that's classified.
Thank you, Interim Chancellor. So the practice in human resources is to look at a job description and to do a review. And that review includes taking a very deep dive into each responsibility and oftentimes taking in comparables, looking at market data, and all of those things were done in this situation. In the memo from Huron, in the last sentence, or excuse me, the last paragraph where he talks about the market data, he refers to CUPA HR. CUPA is standard in comparison to positions throughout higher education. We use that as a tool to compare salaries and placement of positions. In this particular position, in the bylaws, under Title I, Article 4, Section 6, the responsibilities, the duties of the position are listed there. That's part of the job description. In the PDQ, we took it a little bit further in outlining what specifics those requirements, those duties involve. So it's not in a replacement of, but it allows us to further detail what those duties include. Patty, does that answer everything you were looking for?
Yeah, so for the record, and apologies, Officer in Charge Charlton, because the contract doesn't start until September the 4th. So my apologies on the record. Didn't mean to overstep. Yes, I think it does. I think the other question that came up earlier was from Regent Carvalho about the impact of other chief of staff positions. And so each of our campuses, as they go through their personnel processes, would look similar to what HR Director Olson indicated. They look specifically at the task and the duties, not necessarily the title that would singularly guide that that decision on what the compensation would be. So that would be a process that would be done at the campuses as well, because the chief of staff, for example, the chief of staff to the board has a significant responsibility as it refers to the open meeting law and all of the compliance and the regulatory issues around that. That would not necessarily be the case, not specifically, particularly at a campus. It could be in certain offices where they might be subject to open meeting law as well. I hope that answers that question, but yes, thank you.
Thank you. Regent Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to echo very good research, Regent Brown. I appreciate that comment. Questioning is, when we ask questions, we're just doing our fiduciary duty, and it's not necessary. It shouldn't be perceived as bullying, just to make that clear. Cruz Crawford said something very interesting. There's Regent Cruz Crawford. We have two separate analysis going on here, one from Huron and one from CBIZ. CBIZ was done over a year ago, and that's the one that I was referring to because it had the conditions, the position combined. That's the report I was referring to. Huron, as Regent Cruz Crawford said, had never done this type of thing before, so the information might not have been as 100 as it should have been. And I have to agree with that. And the definition of insanity is absolutely doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. We've asked for these things over and over and over again. It just seems like we're being railroaded into a certain groove without having the proper information to make a intelligent do our fiduciary duty. So I would appreciate, I think I'm well in favor of postponing it until we have all the information in front of us in a concise and clear manner.
Regent Brager.
I just wanted to clarify because I stated it wrong, and thanks to my colleague over here. I am not in favor of the motion that Mr. Boylan put up. Pone, thank you.
Regent Acarla.
This has been a great discussion, and I agree. We need to do our due diligence, and we can only do it based on the information that we're given. And I don't feel like I'm a bully either at all. I do ask a lot of questions, and I've been accused of asking lots of questions, but that's our job, really. It's really our job. So I really am in favor of postponing this. I would love to see this come back and all the information that we didn't get today and explanations be part of the briefing papers so we have a lot more questions. And remember, again, this was a really short time frame again, too. We only got this Thursday morning, and it's Tuesday. And, I had big plans over the weekend, and I just haven't been able to spend as much time as I would normally have. So I'm just really in favor of postponement. And even the remarks you were giving us, Chair, sounded like you were ready for postponement. I don't know. We'll see how you vote. So I call for the vote. I do not call for the vote. I take that back.
Regent Carvalho.
I'm still waiting, Mr. Chair.
Regent Carvalho.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have a question specifically through you to Ms. Olson regarding what she described during the process of using the consultants and also going through and creating the PDQs. Positions change over time as well, and many times those who know the positions best are the supervisors. Are supervisors normally asked what these positions entail? And as a secondary question to that, I've never been asked what I believe is the correct job description for this position.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Crystal Abba, Vice Chancellor, Executive Vice Chancellor and Chief of Staff. With your permission, I'll respond on Ms. Olson's behalf because I have that history related to CBIZ versus Huron, because I think you're all kind of nibbling around the same thing, which is what exactly happened with CBIZ, what exactly happened with Huron, and to what extent does that impact the classification of this provision? And so to start off with, I want to say they are completely apples and oranges. The CBIZ study was conducted in relation to your board policy that says that salary schedules that are used for hiring purposes must be reviewed every 4 years. So when they do that review, they look at every category. I often refer to them, and compensation experts refer to them as bands. So for example, in the executive salary schedule, you have a band for presidents, which is grade one. You have a band for vice chancellors, which is grade two, and you have a grade three, which is where this position has been recommended to fall, and those are all bands. So those bands have a minimum and a maximum. What CBIZ did in 2022 and what is done every 4 years is an external consultant compares those bands to market data, and then they say adjust up or down, and typically it's up. So that's what CBIZ did. They did not look at equity. They did not look at PDQs to determine whether or not individuals were appropriately placed into the right band. The other distinction between the CBIZ study and the Huron study is the CBIZ study was system-wide because those schedules that are in there are not just for the executive salaries. They're for salaries all across the system, again, for hiring purposes. So that happened last year. Then when Acting Chancellor Urquiaga came on board, he requested that Huron do an equity study for system admin and SCS only. And that entailed a number of steps, but the first step to that was to make sure that every position, and there are 150 plus of them, about 155 positions within SCS and system admin, Huron wanted to make sure before they looked at anything related to salary is that every individual's position description was accurate. And especially for those individuals who have been within the system for a long time, like myself, my job duties change almost, quite frankly, on a daily basis. So we needed to make sure that each individual who was looked at in that study had an accurate PDQ. So each supervisor, to your point, Regent Carvalho, every supervisor within system admin and SCS was required to make sure that for the staff that reported to them, those PDQs were accurate and updated. And so we went through that machination of every individual reviewing their PDQ and making sure that it was updated. So that's why Ms. Olson continues to make the point of there is a difference between the provisions that appear in Title I, Article 4, Section 6, and the PDQ. And the reason is the PDQ is much more detailed. The PDQ indicates beyond the general duties, because what's happening in Title I is you, this board, creates the position in Title I, Article 4, Section 6. And what's happened over time, to the point that Ms. Olson was making before, is that you all love to change job titles. So this thing has had multiple job titles over time, except when you look at the provisions of Title I, Article 4, Section 6, it's fundamentally the same position that it's always been. And I'm going to use the title that that position held when I first came to the system, which is Secretary of the Board. So if you look at the provisions, again, of title, and these are your provisions, even though you weren't here when this is adopted, you assume that responsibility when you come onto this board. This is your policy. You have already said in Title I, Article 4, Section 6, that this person is responsible for being the custodian of official records of the board, certifying any actions of the board, managing and supervising functions of the chief of staff. So all of those things are absolutely unique relative to the chief of staff for presidents at individual institutions, relative to my chief of staff position. In other words, those are not comparable either. So in asking Huron to come back, because their study was completed, Ms. Olson went to Huron and said, we want to make sure again that this position is appropriately classified. So when they did it initially and they looked at the PDQ, there were several positions within the system that Huron came back and said, you know what, you've misclassified these. You've classified them too high. Carrie's position, the chief of staff, was not on that list. They said at that time when they did the study, it is appropriately classified. But because we wanted to make sure that we were on the right track, we went back and did multiple things. And I think the most important thing for the board to recognize is that when you look at Title IV, Chapter 3, whatever section, Section 2, the subsection where this board indicates that executive faculty, meaning it's telling individuals in HR where this position belongs on the salary schedule. It indicates that executive faculty consists of the chancellor, the secretary of the board, referring to Title I, Article 4, vice chancellors, and presidents. So all of those, if you go look at the executive salary schedule, all right there. So even though the position has not changed over time, or the title has changed, the core position has not. And what's happened is over time, occasionally you have hired individuals who have legal expertise. And no disparagement to the lawyers in the room, but lawyers like to be called lawyers. So Scott Wasserman, who was in this role 20 years ago, said, I want a title change. And ever since then, the board has gone back and forth with various title changes. But the key to this is that first title change where they added special counsel to the board happened in 2009. This provision that says the secretary of the board is executive faculty predates 2005, because if you go to Policy Central, the last time this section was edited was 2005, and it didn't edit this section of this subsection of that section. So that means prior to 2005, this position has always been classified as an executive level position. And it goes back to the issue of what's in the core provisions related to the position. So while you have an opportunity, you can table this item if you'd like, but in doing so, I think you have to understand the ramifications that it may have long term. So if you play this out and say, all right, we don't want this position to be considered part of the executive schedule, and we're going to go back and we're going to revise Title 4, Chapter 3, the section that clearly says the secretary of the board is considered an executive level position. If you do that, I think the challenge that you'll have to grapple with later is that it may have a chilling effect on recruiting efforts later on. And I think many of you have indicated, and I will attest to this, there are all kinds of problems with board policy, but our bigger problem, as Regent Goodman indicated, is we have a morale problem, and you have an individual in this role who is extremely qualified to do this job. And now I'm going to step out over my skis and urge that you do support this, because in doing so, you will follow your own policy. And I apologize, Mr. Chairman, if I've gone overboard here, but I'm done.
Just one moment. Listen, we appreciate your input, and thank you for clarifying some of the historical context of how things have been laid out, particularly how this came about in policy in the Procedures and Guidelines Manual. And in hindsight, I would have liked to have led with all of that, because I think that was a great education for the board to understand some of the things that have gone on. And with that, we'll continue this discussion.
With all due respect,
Regent Carvalho,
and I think it's what Executive Vice Chancellor Abba just said was very important information for us. It didn't answer my question. I'm asking, and so I'll try this one more time to be more succinct in what I'm asking for. It was really much simpler than what we've just heard. But I just want to know if supervisors participate in the creation or the updating of PDQs, and the board is the supervisor of the chief of staff, and I have not had the opportunity to review this. Who and when did that happen? Who did it and when did that happen? That's really all I'm asking here.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Crystal Abba, I actually can't answer that. I believe, and Jimmy may have to correct me, that the appointing authority for the position may be the chancellor. But I assume, I mean, I would have to defer to Carrie for who reviewed her PDQ before it was submitted.
Mr. Chair, it's my understanding that the PDQ has been in place, and as Ms. Olson said, relatively the same for a very long time. You are my supervisor. I do work for the full board. I report
to you, you are my supervisor.
Okay, so for clarification then, everything that exists right now in terms of that PDQ and the tasks of this position, we have them because I certainly, as a supervisor, did not come in and start making changes to some of those tasks. And I'm pretty positive there are things that are laid out in terms of what those tasks are in various materials that we have that perhaps that is it the PNG that we would find most of that?
The duties of this position are in your bylaws. And then, as again, Ms. Olson explained, they are expanded within the PDQ, which is a human resources document.
I guess this goes to my original comments regarding at the April meeting, there was what I believe an expectation by many on the board that we would have a chance to define and, if needed, revise what we felt were the qualifications, the duties and the job description of the chief of staff, which has not happened. And also to echo what Regent Brown has said before, is we keep just pushing all of this off. And there was an opportunity at that meeting, and I thought that that's the direction we were going in, that we would have the opportunity to discuss that. Now, it also sounds like the PDQ has not been analyzed or reviewed by anybody on this board. And Chair, I certainly wouldn't think that you would come into this role and just change it. I would not ask for that. And I think it would be something that would be a suitable activity for the board to do. And again, I thought that that was going to happen and it didn't. So I'm dismayed that that didn't happen and that we've just pushed forward with the appointment of Carrie, and this has put us all in a very difficult situation when many of us felt that we would have the opportunity to review and address any areas that we felt were important for the chief of staff to be able to do in her job description.
Mr. Chair, if I may. Carrie Nikolajewski, for the record, I should have said that earlier. I do not believe that the PDQ has ever been approved by the board in the history of this position. And I believe that Council Martinez at the July meeting explained that that is a document that does not come to the board for editing or approval. Where you would do your editing is in your bylaws, where you have the duties laid out, not necessarily the PDQ. And I do believe that was, if I'm recalling correctly, explained in July.
Jimmy Martinez, for the record. That's correct. The bylaws set forth the duties of the chief of staff position. That's where the duties, that's where the position is created, and that's where the duties are created. PDQs are HR's way of extrapolating official duties into a document for posting for hire. If the board would like to review the chief of staff duties, then that's the appropriate place where it would happen in a bylaw revision.
Thank you for that clarification. And I do understand that, but that had been in the briefing paper, and it has been established that the supervisor does have an opportunity to review the PDQ. So I guess in the case where an employee is directly supervised by the board, it's not the same set of rules and procedures. So again, that's a difficult process to work with. Maybe in the future we do need to look at the handbook in terms of the job description, but I feel like we are also talking in two different ways when we say that the PDQ is very important. The supervisor gets to review, analyze, edit, but we don't get to do that. So I just want to make that clear.
Look, I think one of the things to add to this, as though there hasn't been enough added to it, is that this is part of policy. There are things that are in the PNG that directly relate to the salary and what this position is in terms of a classification. And so even if we just set everything aside in terms of perhaps there's another way to look at things in the future, if we take a look at what we have right now, we do have a salary grade that's in the PNG. We do have the report from a consultant firm that said this is where it should fall. HR has taken a look at this and said this is exactly where this should fall. And to that, in the range of the salary, the recommendation has been to provide the salary at the most minimum place of the salary. And so it's not like it's at the maximum location and now we're having a conversation. Does the maximum, you know, location of the salary fit with all the things that are happening in this position? This is the minimum of the grade, I don't want to say the requirement, but where that band is in terms of salary. Regent Arascada, Vice Chair Arascada.
Thank you, Chair Brooks. Very similar to what Chair Brown has done is research. I'm going to go back, and I'm going to go back kind of far on this, so please bear with me. In June of 1999, Susan Ernst was appointed Secretary of Board. Then in 99, she was appointed Secretary of the Board. 2020, the position changed to Chief Administrative Officer to the Board of Regents. 2005, Susan Ernst retired. And the board appointed F. Doblins. September, position changed to Secretary of Board. In 2006, Scott Osterman was appointed Secretary of the Board. 2007, position was reclassified as a grade 3 on the executive salary structure and title changed to Chief Executive Officer. Now, not until September of 2009, the promotion assigned Scott Washman, adding legal duties, in which consisted of just 15% of the job. And then it just continues. Scott Washman, Dean Gould retired. And I will send that out to everybody that I've been doing over the past 3 months researching this. The board classifies the position as chief of staff as a grade 3 executive. It's in the P&G manual. So we go back and we've been discussing about doing manuals, doing handbooks, doing policy changes. We can go back and change those. Or we can think about in the future to change those. We have something in policy. In June of 2022, this board, did not blink when the new salary structure was presented to us. We did not appear to lose a breath in 2012, just a couple months ago, when we just increased the COLA by 12%. We didn't even flinch. People are watching this meeting. People are formulating opinions about this board. And if this is how an employee of nearly 21 years is regarded, a dedicated employee, then who in their right mind is ever going to want to work for INSHE? Not just in the board office, but throughout the system, on our campuses, in our classrooms. We have policy in front of us, people. We need to continue with this policy. This is something we can go back and look at on another day. Thank you.
Regent Borland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My hand has got so tired up there, I better put it down on the screen. I've just nearly forgotten what I was started, and I was saying to first let me address what Regent Goodman said, and I must thank her for what she said, because she proved my point that why she was a chief of staff for her ex-father-in-law, she only made $60,000. That proves the point that I'm trying to make. Is the position really worth this much? She's making it personal, and others are making it personal. And this is all about the position and the money. I am so glad that Regent Perkins said this is our fiduciary duty. We cannot be handing out money to people just because we like them. And I wish that our counsel or the attorney general had stepped in when a couple of people right now were gushing about the great job that Ms. Nikolowski has done. That's not a part of the agenda. It's against OML. But they did not say anything about that. So I'm so glad that we have had this talk, and I've done so much research and sent it out to everybody. And I hope you do your research further. This is really not, and I've used this term before, bullying. This is our fiduciary duty to ask questions, do research, and do the right thing by the taxpayers. We cannot just hand out money because we... Would you hand it out if it was your business? All of you business people and people who worked in government before, as you keep reminding us, do your research. Do what's right. And like Vice Chair Harris Carter said, yes, there's a lot of people watching us right now. Are we here to just do things because people are watching? Or are we going to do the right thing? And the right thing is our fiduciary duty. We have to watch out for the taxpayers' money and my $2 that are in there also. So, folks, do what's right, not because what's popular or something like that. And I talk fast, I talk hard, because I've been cut off so often by chairs and vice chairs that I try to make sure that I get my say in there like everybody else does. And I'm not going to take up any more time. This is such a waste of our time, I really think. Let's do it. Let's do something that's correct for the taxpayers, what we were elected for. Let's not get boxed in by certain people in a different, you know, administration and such, and do what they expect us to do. Some of the duties that have been mentioned, I do not see Ms. Karolowski doing that that Ms. Olson says. I see a bunch of friends here that have been trying to push this on us and say, pass this money. It doesn't matter. It's not yours. It's the taxpayers. So let's wake up. Thank you, sir.
You know, thanks for your comments, Regent Boylan. I'm just going to say, I think it's really important, regardless of the topic of conversation, when it comes to somebody in staff or another position within our system, that we do everything we can to have these type of conversations in a way that is respectful to those individuals. And I think it's really important, because as we've heard from Regents today, we recognize that there's a morale issue. As you heard from me earlier, we have recruitment issues at executive positions because of the way some things get done. And while it would be fantastic for us to have the conversations that we have to have to make sure that we set ourselves up in a position for a much better foundation as we move forward, we also have to keep in mind that there are some things that are part of the policies that we have. And if perhaps this grade level of this position is an issue, then let's take a look at the policy in the future and make some changes. But we shouldn't begin that today with this staff member. Regent Goodman?
I just have one additional thing to say. Our job is to be the fiduciary for this system. As a fiduciary for this system, it's incumbent upon us to follow policy. The policy dictates that we have a pay schedule that's been given from a consultant that was hired by our former chancellor. That
pay scale was given to HR. HR gives that pay scale to us, and we then approve it. We are at the very bottom of the pay scale. So just to lay out what our responsibilities are, I just wanted it to be very clear. That is a pretty straight line of what our job as a fiduciary is.
There's a couple of other regents that would like to weigh in, and I'm just going to – I certainly do not want to allow time for everyone to have whatever conversations they would like to have. I'm going to offer that perhaps we move on the motion unless there are regents that are adamant about having their voice heard again. Okay, Regent Del Carlo.
I am adamant. I want my voice heard again. I really think we need to postpone this. We don't have all the pieces to the puzzle, and we haven't had it. This is like a tsunami that's been, the wave's been forming, and all of a sudden it's come crashing down. We have presidents in our system that have PhDs, bachelor's, PhDs, 20-plus years of presidential experience. They're only making about $70,000 more than this chief of staff position as an executive level three. Is that right? I don't think that's right. That leads to morale problems. That leads to retention problems. That leads to favoritism issues and inconsistent decisions. I don't think I want to see this postponed. I hope we can do that. Get all the information. We've got a lot of reviewing to do here. We didn't have it all. And then we can come back and talk about it. And it should be after this board meeting, since we're on the agenda item is what, executive vice president, vice chancellor, and I'm sorry, I just can't remember her title, but Crystal Abba said, it should come back after that discussion's had. Not today. I think the timing's wrong here. So I do move. No, I'm not going to move. Somebody else may be as adamant as I was. Thank you.
Regent Brager.
I wasn't going to speak, but after listening to, and I apologize. I didn't memorize her title. Miss Alba, I thought, gave a very good orientation on not only policy, but where this pay schedule is. And if we want to talk about just policy, that's why, once again, I have suggested monthly meetings. This is where we would do those monthly meetings and come to this meeting well-informed of everything that we need to do. And that would help us keep moving forward. I feel well-informed because I did make calls before coming here over the last week or so, because we knew this was coming. So I'm not in favor of postponing it. I am in favor of looking at policy. I'd love to throw the whole book away. It's on my desk. I keep going through it, but half of it is non-essential at this point in time. I don't know how old that book is, but anyway, that's how I feel. And I think that we have listened to the opinions of staff. I respect staff that we have. And when we come to a point, and yes, I do have a past career, and I'm not ashamed of it. I think it brought me lots of information in 24 years before coming here. So it might be brought up once in a while because it's relative to what I have done in the past that gives me the understanding of where we should go and what we should do. So I'm going to just say that and stop.
So we have a motion on the floor that was made by Regent Boylan. This was seconded by Regent Del Carlo. The motion on the floor is to postpone item agenda number 4, the employment agreement for Chief of Staff to the Board of Regents. I'm going to ask Carrie Nikolajewski to do a roll call vote.
Regent Tarkanian.
Did you say my name?
Yes. You're first for the vote.
Aye.
Vice Chair Ariscotta.
No, she voted on.
Who?
No.
Regent Boylan.
Aye.
Regent Brager.
No.
Chair Brooks.
No.
Regent Brown.
Yes.
Regent Carvalho.
Aye.
Regent Cruz Crawford. Regent Cruz Crawford. Regent Del Carlo.
Aye.
Regent Downs.
No.
Regent Goodman.
No.
Regent McMichael.
No.
Regent Perkins.
Aye.
The motion fails.
The motion to postpone item agenda number 4 failed.
Oh, we're missing one.
And so what I'm...
Oh, go ahead.
What I'm looking for is a motion to approve item agenda number 4. Regent Brager?
I make a motion to approve agenda item number 4.
Is there a second to the motion?
I second the motion. I second the motion. Regent Downs.
So the motion on the floor is to approve agenda item number 4. This is seconded by Regent Downs. I'm going to ask Carrie to take a roll call vote one more time on this new motion.
Chair, could I have a point? Did Ms. Crawford vote? Because I thought that it was 6-6.
She did not vote, and it appears that she is no longer connected to the meeting.
Okay, so if it's a tie, then it
fails? Yes.
Okay.
Bylaws require 7 affirmative votes.
Okay, thank you. Just clarification, thank you.
You're welcome. Vice Chair Arascotta.
I'm sorry. We're voting. Okay. Yes.
Regent Boylan.
Nay.
Regent Brager.
Yes.
Chair Brooks.
Yes.
Regent Brown.
No.
Regent Carvalho.
Yes.
Regent Cruz Crawford. Regent Del Carlo.
No.
Regent Downs.
Yes.
Regent Goodman.
Yes.
Regent McMichael.
Yes.
Regent Perkins.
No.
Regent Tarkanian.
Yes.
The motion passes.
Sorry about that. We'll now move on to agenda item number 5, which is new business. Are there any suggested items of new business for consideration for a future meeting? And I will just simply remind the board that obviously this is a time where we want to bring up new business, but we want to not really discuss. We just want to offer new business. Regent Brown?
Thank you. Regent Brown, for the record. So in June during new business, I asked that meeting agendas be written so we can move on to the next meeting if the previous meeting ends early. At the last quarterly meeting, we actually wasted quite a long, many hours of our collective time because of the way the agenda was structured. I have written private messages to see if we could get this next agenda written differently, but no answer. So I am asking yet again if we can get these agendas written so we can move on to the next committee meeting if the first committee meeting ends early. It seems nonsensical to waste everyone's collective time, and it makes the day smoother, and I'm in favor of that, and I don't think I'm alone. My second thing, again, reiterating, feeling like I'm beating a dead horse here, but I'm asking for more engagement when we decide, when the meeting schedule is selected. Today was the second day of class. I get we had a 60-day window, but we did wait until the 11th hour to hold this meeting. The next meeting that was announced, September 28th, nobody was consulted to see if that would work for the group, and I just don't understand. Like, I just cannot understand why 13 of us can't take a poll to figure out when these meetings can be taking place. I know it puts a lot of pressure on our staff to put them on, so I would like the majority of people to be able to attend them and be prepared. And so I'm asking yet again for there to be more transparency when picking the meeting dates and asking for a collaborative collaboration when selecting them.
Regent Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Totally concur with that last comment about using some type of scheduling program that can take, and I think that makes three of us. I think Regent DiCarlo suggested it, now Regent Brown, and now and myself. So let's put that on the next agenda. Deputy Attorney General Long, about the call-in, phone-in public option, we should have that. We have the technology. We can do that. And I would like to see if we can investigate the call-in process that is available for legislators, since you mentioned legislative, and other groups, other boards. The last one is SOPs, standard operating procedures. I would like to see us get those together so that we know what has to be due when, and like the process that we have to go through to get something done, et cetera, because right now we're in a place where half the time we don't even know when the agenda is due or when the backup materials are due. So those type of SOPs for what we do as a board would be greatly helpful in order to make, you know, decisions and to schedule our time better. Thank you.
Just wanted to add that I think the first comment about picking meeting dates, since it's just a process, you don't have to put it on the agenda. If you want to do it, you can just send out a doodle poll or something, unless you're paying for some sort of equipment to do that. You can just do that.
Regent Downs.
It doesn't.
Thank you, Chair Brooks. I would like to at some point put it on the agenda. I know it's going to be several years now before they do another salary study. Since it's every 4 years, we probably have another three to go, but it'd be nice if the board could then review and approve and not just have the chancellor approve. If we have some more input on that, so we don't have surprises of, you know, going from 130 to 208 on a salary schedule. So, thank you. Oh, I also concur with the scheduling protocols that Regent Brown brought up, and if we can also, when we end a committee meeting, start the next one, not have to wait half an hour, that'd be nice. Thank you.
Regent Goodman.
I just concur. I don't know if we need three people, but I really like the idea of sitting down and looking at those policies 3 years from now so we can prioritize what positions we want to meet the pay scale for and what positions we think that we can maybe come down a little bit lower on. So I'd like to, I agree with Regent Downs on that item.
Regent DiCarlo, do you have new business?
I've brought this one up a lot, and we still don't have one. This board needs a governance committee, and there's morale problems on the board. We need a governance committee. Thank you.
Regent Boylan.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate that. I concur with most of my other colleagues in the new business section, but what I've been asking for, and I think Regent DiCarlo has also been asking for, is for the board to have a retreat, and for the board to have a retreat where we can discuss all these policy changes. There's 13 of us. Each of us could take 50 and see how they can be changed to help the board and she. So it's been something that I remember, Chair, you said that, yes, that's a great idea. It's in the works. That was in the beginning of the year. This is the end of the year. And we still haven't had, that would be the best time for us. And I think that is something we need to do and need to do it soon. So please, that's for the record that I'm asking that we have a retreat for the board and the board only with the lawyer, one lawyer present is more than enough. And that gives us, it gets us past this quorum and open meeting law stuff. Thank you, sir.
Carrie Nikolajewski.
Yes, I promise not to discuss, but I just wanted to, Regent DiCarlo's request, we had a first reading of a committee restructuring and the governance committee was included. I do believe it's coming back to the board in October for action. So your request was heard and incorporated. So you'll see that and you'll get a chance to vote on that.
My morale just went up. Thank you for that. Carrie?
We'll move now to public comment. Is there any public comment in Elko?
There is no public comment in Elko.
Is there any public comment in Reno?
None in Reno.
Is there any public comment here in Las Vegas?
Sorry. I apologize for always being just a pain in the rear here, but I'm the old fart, right? I worked in the chancellor's office. I've been faculty senate chair four times. These discussions that you're having, you've been having for 40 years. Not all of you, but the board. When he says to you, we would have to redo the contract the way he said that, that meant he would have to fire her. The way your personnel policies are written, if you decide that you want to put that position back together, you would have to fire her and then offer her a new job. That's how horrible board policy is. Title II, Chapter 5 is a disgrace, and it needs to be done. You need to change the way you do agendas. You need to take things off agendas that don't need, that we do all kinds of things because you've always done them that you don't need to do. Please, please, please have a meeting where y'all just talk about Regent stuff. And I don't think workshop is the right way, and the way the open meeting law is, you just need to have a meeting and have the agenda at that meeting be, how do we want to do our business? And don't spend 3 hours, put a day aside and actually have a discussion about how you want to be regents. It hasn't happened in the 40 years I've been here. You have a chair that's interested in really doing things, I think, a much better way than we've been doing them. You got a bunch of new regents who seem to want to do things in a whole better ways than we've been doing them. Have a conversation. You just don't, that having the committee meetings back to back, used to all have them all at the same time, and that gave you a day and a half a regents meeting, and you had a lot more discussions. When you change that system, all of a sudden, you don't have time to have discussions. Figure out what really belongs on the agenda. Figure out how you really want to do things. Have a meeting to just be regents and talk about being regents. Thank you.
Good afternoon. Molly Apple, APPEL. I'm the Nevada State Faculty Senate Chair, for the record, and the new fart in the room, I guess. I just wanted to speak to the interim chancellor search process. Sorry to do a callback, but I wanted to listen a little bit to the conversation before I jumped in, and wanted to express my encouragement in what I've been hearing from each of these from each of you to really invest significantly your time and thought into the review and overhaul of the chancellor search processes. And I think this may include looking at the search firm you choose and making sure that they have very proven experience and deep understanding of higher education, as well as I appreciate Chair Brooks' recommendations for seeking ways to get a nationally competitive compensation. And I feel your urgency and frustration and feel compelled to just remind everyone in this room that operating constantly in damage control mode around these things is ultimately shouldered by our NSHE educators and students. And so slowing down and making sure you're doing that due diligence actually ultimately will serve us really effectively. And we would also welcome communication about the timeline and next steps regarding those revisions. I think as you've demonstrated today, Chair Brooks, and I would also echo my NFA colleagues' call for continued commitment to the outreach and involvement of your frontline experts and educators as you move to search for a permanent position. Thank you for, I feel like I'm at the end of my class and everyone's like already packing up a little bit, but thank you so much for listening.
Thank you. I do not see any more public comment. This meeting is now adjourned.